OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.
It's 8:15 on this Friday morning and you're very welcome along to OTB AM. We're not going to get too down on Ireland after last night. We're going to focus on some of the positives this morning. We're going to try our best. But the fact of the matter is that the Republic of Ireland were so bad last night that Johnny Ward has ended up getting sick as a result of watching them.
This won't take long, you know. Literally take us 10 seconds or so to go through the positives, if even. It was so, so grim. I mean, I came in this morning and happily enough, the taxi driver had Newstalk on and Shane Coleman was on decrying the fact that the national anthem, the Northern Ireland national anthem was booed. And that was about all really that was memorable about the game. There was a little bit of tension between the two fans. James McLean was, you know, roundly jeered every time he got the ball. But his performance was consistent with the rest of his teammates. Unfortunately, it was depressing stuff.
I don't think you had a croaky voice before the game. It just kind of festered inside you, the poor spectacle you were watching, and you became a sick man.
Yeah, it wasn't true. I remember as a kid, I used to come back from Galway United games when I was really getting into like football on the terraces, and I'd be really hoarse and, you know, really, really, my voice would be struggling. But watched last night kind of and peppered with kind of conversation with the people around me about life in general, but not the game.
Not the game.
So bad, Owen. Like, I mean, left like with a couple of minutes to go, which is something I never do.
Yeah.
But the people I was with just said, right, we're off. And I was like, okay.
Leaving with a couple of minutes to go and a nil all really sums it all up.
Yeah, there was never a notion in my head. Like, I never even checked to see, oh, was there a goal like in the couple of minutes that I missed. Just went down the stairs and went out into, you know, the surrounds of Lansdowne Road, and the atmosphere was a bit strange. It was just like people are getting accustomed to how rubbish we are.
Yeah, that is the boring thing. Like, I don't know. Does the idea that it was Northern Ireland make it a hell of a lot worse? Nothing to do with the fact that they're Northern Ireland. It's to do with the fact that you could pick any team out of Europe on that level, that they came to Lansdowne Road and they outclassed us. That is the real thing that's kind of hammering it home. It's like, all well and good, we can make legitimate excuses about Wales and Denmark and the quality of player that they have. And if you're a sympathiser, you can definitely say that they deserve to be outclassing a team like the Republic of Ireland. Northern Ireland don't deserve to be outclassing a team like the Republic of Ireland, despite all our failings at the moment.
No, I mean, we had a situation where the FAI put out this, like, nearly celebratory tweet about, like, the performance of Darren Randolph. And I was like, you know, it really was like, what a performance from the Wicklow man. And I was like, at home to Northern Ireland, we're hailing our goalkeeper. And then the guys I was with at the game, we had this discussion. If it was like, tonight's man of the match, which had to be an outfield player, is, everyone would be like, literally couldn't give it to one player. And I thought it was, I remember being on here with Daniel MacDonald, and he was kind of half lauding Martin O'Neill for having a goal when we were 1-0 down at home against Wales. And that summed up how bad things have gotten, because last night we were thoroughly outplayed by, a country with, what, a third of our population that we've historically been better than, or certainly in my lifetime. Earlier on this week we spoke about the Windsor Park experience 25 years ago, and I remember growing up we always expected to beat Northern Ireland. They often gave us a good game, but their players played at an inferior level to the Republic's. And now at the moment, like, they would have about 3 Premier League players playing regularly enough, and we have something similar, but they're a far better coach team, you know. Their big problem last night was in front of goal. They have an issue with scoring goals, and it looked like almost like a confidence thing, but if they get over that, I thought they were very well set up. They weren't bad now, Northern Ireland, in fairness, but from our outfielders, I don't think there was any positive whatsoever from that game. We had 3 central midfielders who I don't remember anything they did. Callum O'Dowda is a player with a lot of ability, got on the ball maybe once in the first half, taken off. What did Hendrick do? I mean, and the players just don't seem to know what the system is. The three centre backs kind of almost look like they're slightly out of position. Some horrendous mistakes as well. You know, I thought Glenn Whelan was probably our best player, and then he was taken off. And up front, Sean Maguire getting injured. I was at the game with Shane Keegan, who writes for The Times, and he met Sean maybe a day or two ago, and he was really disappointed he didn't start, because obviously he'd done this big interview with him, and apparently the last question he asked him in the interview was like, what are your hopes for, you know, an ideal sort of 2019, and he just said, stay free of injury, like, and seeing him hobbling off was, I felt real sympathy for him because he's had a, he's now almost on the verge of being defined as an injury prone player, and nobody wants that. But it kind of summed up the night. I thought the ex-League of Ireland players, obviously I'd have an affinity with, I thought they struggled in the main. I thought Curtis even struggled. Seamus Coleman didn't have a particularly good game. McLean was, I guess he was a bit of a marked man, but he made no impact on the game. But just there's no, the team just looks like it doesn't really know what it's actually aspiring to do. I don't think the 3-5-2 is working, but if the 3-5-2 were properly coached, maybe the players would watch, you know, or sorry, the players would at least work in cohesion. Another guy beside me at the game was Owen Garvin, who was, you know, maybe a player that didn't go on to achieve what he could have, but a brilliant technical player, and he was just despairing watching it. It was very, very grim, and I've some sympathy for Martin O'Neill because the players at his disposal last night looked very, very deficient in terms of quality. But as I was saying coming out, we're bad. Those players are pretty bad, but they're not that bad. They are a bit better than that. And it's the two O'Neills, really, like Martin O'Neill, if you were to give him points against, you know, his against Michael O'Neill, I mean, Michael O'Neill is just bashing him at the moment.
Yeah, it goes back to that kind of analogy I like to make about, you know, in Space Jam and Michael Jordan loses his talent. We're almost at that level where Ireland players are playing well below their level that you're like, where is their talent gone? Like, that's, it's not to do with this collective idea of that we've got a poor team anymore. It's that plus the idea that all these players are underperforming, and it's just hard to know where to look for any blame for this. Like, you talk about a lack of positives. We'll
want to blame somebody now. We want to blame somebody.
Well, that's it.
Otherwise, we're going to struggle to get through this show.
Who can we blame? Tweet us at Off The Ball. Comment on the stream if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, because we want to know who to blame. Here's what's coming up on today's show. The breakfast menu coming your way in a few moments. More Ireland chat in there. There is a couple of other stories we want to get to in the newspapers as well.
We're going to have to talk rugby, I suppose.
We're going to have to talk a bit of rugby. There's a couple of interesting pieces written about the sport itself, about the All Blacks, about the game tomorrow. And we're also going to chat a little bit about Richard Scudamore in the newspapers as well, getting a nice golden handshake from the Premier League clubs, a sweet £5 million goodbye, and fair play to him is all I can say for that.
Thoroughly deserved.
Shane Byrne is coming up at around 8:30, 8:35. That's after Darren Cleary's in with all your headlines, and then Alan Quinlan will be in to preview the game as well tomorrow. McGregor's future, then we're going to round off the show. Niall McGrath will be in. He'll also be talking about the World Amateur MMA Championships, which are underway at the moment, a future potential Olympic sport. We'll get his thoughts on that, and as you can see there, Conor McGregor's future. But before all that, time for the back pages.
OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.
We'll start with the Irish Times this morning, and Gerry Thornley says fear is still very much a factor for Schmidt. You can see Bundiaki and Kieran Marmion posing for a photograph with a fan there. And playing the All Blacks won't bother Aki too much, says Marmion. And there's a bit of nostalgia there in terms of previous Ireland All Blacks games. And Gerry Thornley poses the question, are Ireland right to be concerned about Barnes? Listing a number of incidents where Ireland were either very lucky to win games that Barnes was refereeing, namely the Grand Slam in 2009, and a number of games that they were very unlucky to lose because of Barnes, namely, you know, you can talk about Wales in the 2013 Six Nations, or 2012 Six Nations, I should say, when you lost 23-21. So interesting stuff there. And Liam Tolan saying that Ireland don't need to get angry, they need to get smart for the All Blacks game tomorrow. Back page of the Irish Independent this morning is Northern Exposure. Randolph saves, blushes as Ireland go 270 minutes without a goal at home. Also, Levy injury fears linger as Hansen targets Ireland leaders. So the Dan Levy injury is very interesting. We're just trying to manage him, said Joe Schmidt. He trained very well on Tuesday, but he's had a bit of soreness. We're expecting he will be up, running and ready. He's just sore from the week before. Full body soreness. That's the specific injury he's suffering from. Nothing too specific, but he was stiff and sore. So Dan Levy's suffering from full body soreness. I'm not sure how you treat full body soreness, but hopefully
we've all been there.
We've all been there, certainly.
Maybe it's a different kind of type of full body soreness than Dan Levy's, but
The certain sort of despairing full body soreness where mentally, and like you can even feel the crevices in your teeth. That full body soreness is never pleasant, but I'm sure Dan Levy will recover from that, and hopefully won't pull out before tomorrow's game. And also on the back of the Irish Independent, Brian Cody saying intercounty elitism needs to be tackled. So Brian Cody has been speaking to the Good Day GAA podcast down in Melbourne, which is a great name for a podcast, basically saying that we need a meeting of minds to fix the disconnect between club and intercounty GAA. He's spoken about it in the last couple of months. months. Tommy Walsh has spoken about it in the last couple of months. It is that time of year again where this is very much a hot topic. But I kind of feel that this off-season, I think people like Brian Cody are kind of going more hammer and tongs after this idea than they have in previous years, that to a certain extent he's kind of looked after, everybody's looked after their own. Like Brian Cody says, he's obviously believed all this, but he says, it's in my interest, you know, just focus on the elite side of the game because I am Kilkenny manager. But now it seems that he's pretty happy to put his neck on the line and say, listen, this is a serious issue. The vast majority of GAA players are not getting the run of the rubber green when it comes to getting good games at good times of the year when it comes to the GAA, and it needs to be fixed. So,
yeah, it's a point that Joe Brawley's made a lot, in fairness, and I think it's great that Cody's come out with that. And in fairness to Kilkenny, like, they have a very strong ethos in terms of club games as much as is possible during the inter-county championship program. And it's become an absolute nonsense that the players are protected so much and the disconnect is there. And it's great that he's brought that to the fore. Something like, Cody may not say much to the media, but I think that carries real weight.
Yeah, 100%. At the Times Ireland edition goes with, Aki will rise above the All Black taunts. That's from Joe Schmidt's press conference yesterday. And VAR is given the go-ahead, says Martin Ziegler here. So we're going to have VAR in the Premier League next year. The Premier League clubs have voted for it. Charlie Austin last week, clearly having a material impact on the Premier League. They've decided, it's obviously a coincidence, but I certainly haven't seen anybody react with such vitriol to a refereeing decision as I have Charlie Austin last week. The Parklife incident, the remix of that was hilarious. Do check it out. And I saw somebody
Well worth watching.
Yeah, I saw somebody referring to this week's Premier League decision as Varklife, which I thought was quite a good
like
pun.
That.
I like that a lot.
Give that one, yeah.
You've also got Scudamore taking a £5 million gift as well, Martin Ziegler, on the back of the Times. Irish Examiner this morning, zero comfort. The fine Randall spares poor Republic's blushes. And Ronan O'Gara saying, once they groaned Toner's playing, now they scream for his inclusion. And included he is for tomorrow's game. He replaces Ian Henderson in one of four changes for the Ireland team. A couple of the UK back pages before we move on to the tabloids, Johnny. The Daily Telegraph goes with Rooney's last hurrah. England hero bids final farewell at Wembley as Southgate's young guns cruise to victory. And it's the same story on the back of The Guardian this morning. They say, Rooney return is a striking one for Wilson. Bournemouth forward marks impressive England debut with a goal on a night Wembley finally says goodbye to the country's record goal scorer. And more on the Scudamore story, fury over his payoff. Supporters group says clubs should hang heads in shame. We'll come back to that story in our breakfast mini very shortly. But you've got the tabloids, Johnny?
I do, yeah. Starting with the Mirror, Oba the Moon, which is obviously... It's interesting they went with that, obviously, as a little bit of a bright spark in the night for Ireland. Michael Obafemi declared for Ireland for the match last night. Bund of Brothers, Marmion Bax, fired up Aki and O'Neill, we deserve the booze. Which I think we did, to be fair. Rescue call, this is from the Daily Mail. O'Neill looks to Obafemi as options narrow and tensions rise as Irish gear up for a spiky clash against the Kiwis. Here we have the Sun, blank of Ireland. Buck stops with O'Neill, so they've gone with a play on bank and then Buck thrown in as well, so a bit of a monetary team. Michael's all in green and Joe Schmidt is bracing himself for a spiky All Blacks battle, which with the headline, All Good.
Is Michael's all in green a monetary pun as well? Is he going to get rich by playing for Ireland? The answer is no. Probably not.
You're really taking this to a new level, Owen. Republic of Booze. Is the Herald, which dismal run goes on for Martin and Ireland. And you're kind of thinking, like, when do we actually create a chance? Not to mind, when do we last score? All Blacks to target key man Sexton, which would be interesting.
You could watch an Ireland game, throw up the volume up to full on your television and say, I'm going to go do a few bits around the house and come back whenever I hear Keith Andrews or whoever the main commentator is raising their voice for an Ireland chance. And you would miss the entire game. You could get so much stuff done during an Ireland game.
What would the few bits around the house entail? Just open
to the chair. You'd actually have to find...
Bit of ironing.
Bit of ironing. Bit of, I don't know, bit of cleaning.
Yeah.
Read an autobiography, page cover to cover.
You actually read a book. You could start reading books during Ireland games with the commentary on. United Ireland.
Here we go. Yeah. Top of the morning to you.
This is the Star. Randolph is marking his backstop.
Yes.
As Coleman blasts poor display.
Congratulations to everybody in the Star. That's right up there.
DUP leader Arlene Foster before the international friendly at the Aviva Stadium. I wonder, was she more entertained by the drab nil-all draw last night or the Ulster final, which was pretty disappointing and a pretty drab game as well from a Fermanagh perspective. Maybe we'll get her on the show. I doubt it. But.
It's a good question, actually. That is a very good comparison. I wonder, do people play down to the idea that Arlene Foster is watching? That Fermanagh was like, nah.
Yeah, there was a great photo before the game with John Delaney. I was just like, I don't know where to start with this, but anyway, getting from Arlene Foster to the woman whom she's propping up at the moment, shall we say, Theresa May. Obviously, the DUP keeping the Tories in government. Bookies say this may be the end for Theresa at the back of the Racing Post. And Welsh Wonders, Giggs' men set for promotion. Wales play Denmark. And obviously, the contrast between Wales and Ireland at the moment probably should be two similar enough kind of nations in terms of population. And, you know, they've obviously a big rugby culture as well. You know, they're a long way ahead of us, unfortunately. I don't know why this is, actually. I really don't know why we're so bad at the moment. Where we don't seem to have an awful lot of talent coming through. It's probably a little bit of a cycle when we're actually at a particularly bad time in Irish football, just with the group of players we have. But it does remind me of Johnny McDonnell, his anecdote about he's managing a Belvo team, Belvedere, maybe under 15s or something like that. And he said to them, can I ask you lads, how many of you have a football at home? And half of them didn't. And I was like, well, 14-year-olds should have a football. And I just thought that was interesting. I think we're not playing enough football on the streets, maybe. Damien Duff has spoken about it, but in any event, we're pretty crap at the moment.
Yeah, let's get on to our breakfast menu. And the first item on our breakfast menu this morning is Ireland positives. There's not too many of
them. Moving on from that, anyway.
One of them is that it wasn't actually the worst thing I watched yesterday. The worst thing I watched yesterday was the John Lewis ad, and I don't care what anybody says. It's the worst John Lewis ad they've ever come up with. The other positive is Michael Obafemi. Is it a positive, though? We'll only know in about a decade, or how much of a positive it is. I guess at this point, every player counts. Every player who is involved or in the periphery of some Premier League action. Those 26 Premier League minutes that Michael Obafemi has under his belt are incredibly valuable to the Irish football supporter. So at this juncture, it is a positive thing, but it could become a very mediocre news story, and we'll wonder why we cared so much about it in 10 years' time. And that's just the nature of sport. It's not to say that I suspect Michael Obafemi won't live up to his hype. It's that he's a teenager. Teenagers often don't live up to their potential. We've seen it with people who are far more hyped than Michael Obafemi at a similar age.
Yeah, I remember a mate of mine. He used to have this story about, like, it was kind of a generic like GA club game where a couple of old lads are on the sideline, and a fella comes on who's like kind of in his mid-20s now, and he comes off the bench and he's not playing that well, and he looks overweight, and the old lad says to his mate beside him, yeah, he was a great minor. Life obviously just didn't go the way it should have, you know, and look at him now. But if you have a player making an appearance for Southampton like 20 years ago, in and he's eligible for Ireland, or he may or may not be, it wouldn't really be a story, like, because we obviously had good players in those days. But now we're just clinging to any hope at all, and I think we're a bit kind of bruised by the whole Declan Rice experience, that, like, you know, we grasped at a little bit of hope that we could have a player of genuine Premier League quality. I don't really know much about Obafemi at all, apart from the fact that he's very interesting in terms of a case study of where Ireland might be going with these players, because I think, like, Irish players with Nigerian descent will become more prevalent, we'll say, in terms of where they might play than, for example, Irish players or English players of Irish descent in England, because I think that will change because of just the population change in the last few years. And I see every League of Ireland underage team now has some player of African descent. And this is fantastic because it's bringing a slightly different dimension to maybe our football culture as well, and how they kind of, how these, you know, kids of the future, you know, assimilate into Ireland, and how their families assimilate, I think is very interesting. I did fear that he might declare for England or Nigeria. He's probably not good enough to declare for England, really. But,
well, that's the thing. Is anybody else suspicious about this? That I've got no doubt that Michael Obafemi feels he's Irish. He is an Irishman. And maybe we purely have to take this on face value, that this was a totally patriotic decision, and he was like, I'm Irish, why would I play for any other country? But we've seen from the Declan Rice situation that other factors are at play when it comes to international decisions right now. They are international decisions. So why is Michael Obafemi, if he is of the mind that Declan Rice is, why is he choosing Ireland over Nigeria or England? That leaves me with a little bit of suspicion. Yeah. Like, does he not believe that he's good enough to play in the World Cup, because Nigeria and England will qualify for far more World Cups during his entire playing career than Ireland will? But maybe that's just me being cynical. Like
you're being very cynical here, Owen. I mean, you're going along the avenue to suggest that he may not be particularly good, which is a little bit worrying because
you've really managed to see through. Am I that transparent?
Yeah. We'll get to this later. You know, in the sense of why he actually might be making this decision. But I'm going to look at it as a positive and just say, yeah, he might actually like being around the setup. And he's obviously, you know, he's Irish, and Ireland have courted him. And yeah, so hopefully there's not much more to that. But I have no idea if this player is much good. I mean, the fact that he's played a couple of minutes for Southampton in the Premier League, it doesn't really mean anything. Not much anyway. You know, Southampton are... obviously a struggling club as well who are lacking striking options, but when there's no hope on, you have to cling to something.
Well, that and, quote know, there, Michael was born in Ireland, so this is the country he naturally wants to play for, says it all. He's an Irishman. That's probably the full stop of it. But like you can't help but being cynical about every little thing about Irish football right now and every little decision. And it's unfortunate that we're taking our cynicism out on young Michael Obafemi at the moment, but that's just the way our mindset is. We're all very negative when it comes to Irish football, and I'll openly put my hands up and say that I am too.
I'm not sure England really is a runner for him. And then Nigeria, if he were to play Nigeria, would there be complexities involved in that in terms of like just if he does make a decent club career?
Why isn't England an option for him? You're a teenager who's played in the Premier League.
Yeah, but like England have resources that are just so like he may look at Ireland and say I have a bit of a chance here. Like there's one way of looking at it as well. I have a chance of actually playing international football for a nation with a proud footballing history like Ireland that may have a reasonably bright future down the line. I may not be able to make much of an impact with England. So that it's kind of almost.
So you're saying that you're getting cynical about this as well.
I'm speculating that he may have looked at it that way. I don't look at like patriotism is nonsense for me in many of these instances. Like the whole thing about Declan Rice, like. Nations were made a couple of hundred years ago. You know, most of our history of humanity, there were no such thing as the nations we have today. And in years to come, nations will be obsolete again. So I wouldn't get too hung up about, you know.
Some people, they mean more than others.
Absolutely. Like some people, you know, like obviously Kevin Kilbane has been very strong in the Declan Rice situation. But that doesn't, you know, I totally respect like feeling that you're from two countries, feeling that you're from no country. You know, it's not a big deal to me at all. Maybe he's actually made this football decision that is like, I have a chance to play for Ireland. You know, going back to the old days where clearly players at like mercenaries, as Billy Bingham called them, getting back to again the game of 25 years ago, they played for Ireland because probably they couldn't play for England in that they just weren't good enough. And I wouldn't get too worried about that. It's a good chance to play international football as well because we're really crap at the moment. Mm. So if he can actually move at all, if he can literally move, and look like he can play football, he probably is a fair chance.
If you're just joining us, as you can probably gather from the tone of that conversation, we've just been speaking about Ireland positives, onto Ireland negatives, and
hang on a sec. The positive is that a kid who may or may not be any good has declared for Ireland is the positive of a friendly game against in which he had no part.
100%.
Right. That's
happy times.
I did have a very nice burger before the game, and it was, you know, not one of these crappy burgers you get at a match that's like really flimsy. It had plenty of meat in it.
Right.
Was
it beef? Yeah.
It was a beef burger, but they threw in a bit of bacon on top, and I was absolutely starving. And I also forgot my wallet, so I got it bought for me with the Diet Coke. I ate that for maybe the first 10 minutes of the game. That was the 10 minutes of the game I particularly enjoyed.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Nice it sounds like such a nice burger might have actually prevailed into the 25th, 30th minute as well.
It would have gone a bit cold, though, in fairness. You got to eat the burger hot.
No, but I mean the lingering satisfaction after consuming it.
Oh, no, it did. Yeah. It did. But I wanted another one.
Yeah.
You can't ask for a second burger, though, can you?
You definitely can on a night like last night. And I think it is time to move on to the negatives because I'm just too... we've got carried away with all the cheer we've been having this morning. It's been too positive for me. So let's hear from some of the players. Seamus Coleman first up. He was speaking to Jamie Moore at full time.
In terms of being a defender who likes to attack, how hard is it being involved in these games when game after game the other team has more possession, they make more passes, and we don't just have as much of the ball maybe as we would like?
Yeah, it's you know, in an ideal world you wanna be on the front foot, you wanna have more of the ball, but you've got to adapt to your surroundings. I'm not playing for Everton when I come away for Ireland, so I'm not going to start, you know, expecting that. We need to be better tonight. Of all nights, we're playing Northern Ireland at home. As I said, I keep going back to players. We have to We have to be better. We have to want the ball, and I think that's the hardest thing to do in football is get on the ball and be brave and make angles. That is the hardest thing to do in football. You can make all the tackles you want in the world, but you have to be brave and try and make things happen.
Yeah, you mentioned brave a few times, and like the probably two best chances that Northern Ireland had were from us losing the ball. I know Daryl Lennon got a bit of stick on Twitter. I replied to someone saying he's trying to get on the ball, he's trying to play. Do you want to just tell me a little bit about that, you know, the comparison between the long balls that we play and trying to play, and if we lose the ball trying to play and Darren doesn't make that save, we probably lose this game, so it's a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, it's difficult to get it right. Look, we want to play, but you've got to play in the right areas. But as I said, you know, Dara is a great lad. You know, Twitter stick, it's part and parcel of the game nowadays, but Dara is a great lad. He's a willing lad, but sometimes when Dara's got the ball, he needs to look up and see people wanting the ball, and that's the next step for us. That might look like it's Dara's fault, but I haven't seen it back. But were we giving Dara enough angles? That's what we need to see.
I'm not sure how many games you played at the Aviva for Ireland, but I'm not sure how many you would have played with, you know, a crowd smaller than this. Was just over 30,000 in the stadium, some boos at the end. How do we get people wanting to come to watch this team again? And, you know, the support in the game is great, but there were boos at the end.
Yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, we've got the best fans in the world. When we're doing well, they're unbelievable. But we, as players in that dressing room, we've got to weather this storm together now. We're going to get criticised. To take it on the chin, we have to take it on the chin. We weren't good enough tonight, so we have to take it on the chin, but we also have to man up and take responsibility as players, as professional footballers who are playing for our country. We have to take responsibility, myself included.
How big could a win be on Monday to end the year on a high after what has been a difficult year, I'm sure?
Yeah, we could come away after beating Denmark on a great note, and that has to be our full focus now. You know, we've had our backs to the wall before, and we've come out, and as I said, we've not been good enough this year, and if we can get a result, a win against Denmark, it would take us into the qualifiers on a great note.
Yeah, when we were doing well, they're unbelievable, Seamus Coleman says of Irish fans. I'm not sure, is that a kind of a veiled dig? But it's probably just true, is it? I'm not sure what you think.
Yeah, Irish fans, yeah. Like, in fairness, they do travel. Like, I have to look at myself. I mean, I wasn't particularly inspired by going to that game last night, yeah. You know, and...
Do we need to do better as Irish football supporters?
Possibly. Although, at the same time, you know, should you be compelled to watch the Irish team at the moment, the way we play? I don't know. I mean, we've gone, 270 minutes without scoring a goal. Barely creating a chance in these games. That's the really worrying thing. Like, and it was an interesting article, or an interesting interview with Coleman, because he made very good points about, like, players. Like, we had three midfielders last night who... to me, did not look like they wanted the ball. Like, and I think that kind of stems from the top, in that, like, they maybe just don't have the self-belief when they play for Ireland. But, like, Jeff Hendrick has to be a better player than what we saw last night. Like, I really didn't know he was playing. Like, Callum O'Dowda maybe touched the ball once, taken off. You know, Robbie Brady, one or two excellent set pieces, really. And he obviously, because of he was coming back, you know, there's a little bit of a kind of an out ball for him, but... like, the defenders, when they got on the ball, they're kind of looking up, and there was a fairly high press from Northern Ireland, but just the systematic failures all over the team. Like, and Coleman looking into the dressing room, we have to weather the storm. Like, and that's the narrative from him, I think, with the Keith Andrews comments that he made. I think that was like an embattled siege mentality type operation from
Coleman. Nothing wrong with that, though. Sometimes.
No, it's not necessarily that I disagree with it, but I think in terms of where he was coming from with Keith Andrews, you know.
Okay, the comments about him as a player.
I don't think they were warranted, and I think Coleman was coming from this attitude, well, things are really crap, so I might as well say something that gives us a bit of a lift, or just brings us a bit together as a team. And it's interesting there that he kind of criticised, you know, the mistake of, I think he was talking about Lenehan, but then, you know, started to say, well, you know, when he has the ball, he needs players actually running for him.
Yeah.
But in terms of the fans, like, I mean, the fans go, they travel to see the team. Just, I suppose, goodwill is wearing a bit thin at the moment. There's a massive, massive negativity. And there's a section of League of Ireland fans who've long had a disconnect with the Irish team because, you know, there was no correlation between the two. Now these League of Ireland players, or ex-League of Ireland players, are coming through, but they kind of... they would have, I suppose, maybe an affinity with Brian Kerr, and Brian Kerr was on Was that a screening of a documentary during the week where he roundly slated the FAI and said, you know, I'm never going back? And you're Damien Duff there saying, like, it's a disgrace that Brian Kerr isn't involved. But there's a massive disconnect between a lot of Irish football fans and the FAI and the running of football in this country by John Delaney and a lot of basic cronies in the operation who are kind of happy to maybe sit over what Irish football has become. And tickets being given away for free at games is becoming a grim indictment of where we are, really.
Are they happy to sit over what we've become, though? Or were they happy to sit over what we were? And then this is just the end product of it, that now they're really realising that things need to change. Because it doesn't make sense that the FAI would want Ireland to be in this position. It really doesn't. I just don't buy the idea that the FAI are sort of complicit in Irish football's downfall. That surely their intentions for the national football team are good.
Well, in theory, yes, but you have a board or, you know, a board, an ageing board of men who, I mean, anyone, I've actually never been to an FAI AGM, but like it's a fairly obsequious kind of offering, and it's a lot of just plaudits towards...
It's a bizarre event.
John Delaney. There are basically more security men there than journalists. Like,
yeah.
It's very security heavy for a football association's AGM in a harmonious country. It just seems very strange, but I'm not sure that the FAI works in a sense of a proper democracy, maybe like the GA, where, you know, there's real drive at grassroots level to improve the product. I think a lot of people have just sat there and been happy to go along with things and, you know, presided over an issue where the Aviva Stadium debt really became a colossal problem for the organisation, where League of Ireland clubs now have to survive with virtually no prize money, for example. So our association has given virtually no prize money to our professional football league, which really should be driving football in this country from under 13s next season up. I'm not saying the FAI is at fault for everything, but I certainly think there's a massive disconnect between grassroots fans in this country and the FAI, and I think I'm not sure, like, they've thrown money at the management team, but like the decision to give Martin O'Neill and Roy another term itself was very, very questionable.
Well, what else did Brian... You were at that event with Brian Kerr this
yeah.
week, were you? Because I saw some of the quotes reported this week, but obviously some of it was kind of off-air or whatever. It was just for the people in the room. Like, what else was he saying with regards to the FAI? Like, I'm sure... I often wonder, does he kind of feel a sense of injustice himself? Because all Brian Kerr supporters do seem to sense that.
Yeah, I mean, Brian is obviously bitter about what happened. He got a short term with the FAI, obviously fell out with the hierarchy, and that was the end of that. He spoke a lot about, you know, I suppose Noel O'Reilly's role as well with him, and the fact that they got their kids to play football and to be positive. And he spoke about how much he hated, you know, the football we played under Jack Charlton. Brian just feels that as long as John Delaney is there, he's never going to get any work with the FAI. And Damien Duff was very emotional. He wasn't supposed to speak at the event, but he was in the crowd. And Tony O'Donoghue asked him to talk, and he was like, "Oh God, I wasn't expecting to talk." But he said, "You know, I was holding back the tears, and it's basically a disgrace that Brian isn't involved in football really at any level in this country because of the amazing work that he did at underage level." Now you can look at Brian's kind of tenure with the international team, and that was an interesting time because he was very kind of, maybe you could even say, anal in the work that he did with video work and preparation work. And I think some of the English-based players maybe didn't buy into Brian Kerr as much as some of the players he had at underage level. But I think he just feels the FAI really don't have the proper interests of the game in this country at their heart. And that John Delaney has kind of... He just has a structure there that kind of ensures his own survival at the very least. And you shouldn't forget the Aviva Stadium debt has been a massive, massive issue. I know we hit a recession and we've had a few years of the Irish team not being very good, but it has had a profound impact on the finances in this country. And we can always look and compare when Iceland got to the Euros and the way they distributed like that money back into the Icelandic league, which punches way above its weight for the population. And like, how can, if from a League of Ireland perspective, how can you look at the books for next year and say, well, we've essentially no money coming in unless we make Europe? And it's like, you know, from a League of Ireland perspective, from 2020 onwards, the FAI is going to be removed a bit from it. But it's very dispiriting, you know. And I can't say I know the FAI you know, the ins and outs of the operation, but it's run in a fairly strange way for an institution that's running something as big as Irish football.
Let's hear from last night's man of the match. It was Darren Randolph, and he was speaking to Jamie after the game.
The Aviva, you know, experience and the Aviva atmosphere, like the great games you've played here, the Germany game, for example, like the place is rocking. In recent times, it just hasn't been. Stadium's half full tonight, a lot of like, crowd unhappy at the end of the game. How would you sum up the kind of atmosphere for the players in comparison to those days to now when, you know, it's a little bit different?
We can affect who comes. All we can do is play when we're here. You know, like I said, comparing tonight to other games is difficult because, you know, we have some huge games here in the past that have been in competitions at key stages. But like I said, we can only just continue to play on that pitch and then the rest will look after itself.
Yeah, I understand it's a friendly game and it's not a competitive international, but I'm sure you guys would like to have more people here because I'm sure the FAI would do the same because it must be, you know, difficult when you're coming out and you're seeing that the place isn't full. And, you know, do you think the players need to do more and the country needs to do more to make people want to come to watch you play?
You could look at it from both sides, but I say, you know, if we had a better year, maybe there would have been more people in the stadium today. Yeah.
And in terms of trying to get, you know, wins and goals, we just spoke there to Ronan Curtis and to Callum Robinson about at their end of the pitch, at your end of the pitch, you're making saves like tonight and keeping clean sheets. But you also have a really good view of the other end, and we do need to try and be a little bit more creative and try and have more chances in front of their goal, don't we?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, we know that. Everyone watching the games knows that. So, again, that's something else for us to work on.
Darren Randolph speaking to Jamie Moore after Northern Ireland nil last night. Comes back to the idea of fans once again. If we had a good year, there would be more people there last night, which is true. It's not necessarily a criticism from him, but it's probably true. Like I didn't go to the game last night. I feel a little bit guilty that I didn't go and support Republic of Ireland against Northern Ireland. Like
a few bits around the house.
That's it. I got so much done. Yeah. You wouldn't believe it. I'm sure there's other people who kind of like feel a little bit. It's like, why am I there? Why don't I feel compelled to go to support the team? It's just, it's become a point. And it is quite a recent thing. It is kind of in the last 3-4 months since they kind of started this Nations League where it's like, it's got really, really tough.
Yeah, like in fairness to the Nations League, it's kind of brought friendly games to another level where they have some relevance. I actually think it's a great idea, you know, and I think pitching countries of a similar quality together renders it possible, say, for Gibraltar to do something and, you know, makes the games meaningful and the games at the top level especially kind of attractive. But like a game like last night, I mean, if you're going to spend whatever it was to get in, I got a free ticket, which a lot of people listening.
Would you pay to go?
No, I wouldn't. Irish international games are not appealing to me at all at the moment. Maybe I'm, you know, absconding from my own patriotic duty, but
that's what I often wonder. Like, would you feel guilty if you were sitting at home last night?
Well, I'm on the show today where I have to get up at say 6:30 or whatever. Like, so if I go to the game, getting home, it's a Thursday night, so it kind of interrupts my week to an extent. Like, so just from a very practical sense, I'm not going to enjoy the game.
My justification, but yeah. I shouldn't have a justification.
It's a friendly game as well. Like, I wouldn't get too hung up about our crowd. Like, Irish crowds are very good, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're still a football nation as far as I'm concerned. I think it's the main sport. But like, could you see why people wouldn't come from, like, I met guys from Galway at that game last night, Galway United fans. And I didn't like question their sanity like outwardly, but certainly I did. Like in my head, I was like, "What are you doing here? Like, you know, to come up from Galway on a midweek night to watch a friendly game that's 100-1 on to be rubbish." Like, you know, and it was. I find it vaguely kind of compelling in the sense of just observing the disconnect between this team and this management team and the fans, and how the atmosphere has just become almost an acceptance of, like, you know, the mundanity that you're likely to be. And there was no atmosphere there at all. The only bit of crack was, like, the Northern Ireland fans brought a good atmosphere.
Well, the booing of a national anthem, is it? Would you call that good crack?
From which perspective?
From both sides. Like, Northern Irish fans obviously brought that to the table.
Like, I'll be honest, we came into the ground, like, just before kickoff, and it was the typical Irish kind of question. One of the lads says, "Have we time for a pint?" And I was like, well, it's 3 minutes to kick off. I don't think we have, to be honest. But we, so we didn't have a pint. So we, but I went for my aforementioned burger and I missed the national anthems. And I wasn't disappointed about that because
Burger was lovely.
The burger was lovely, and I genuinely do not enjoy Northern Ireland's having God Save the Queen as their national anthem. I've never been a fan of that. I think it alienates nationalists in the North. I think if Northern Ireland's, if the IFA was making a deliberate attempt to not attract nationalists to go to Windsor Park, which has become a much more friendly place, well, it's doing a good job by persisting with God Save the Queen. That said, I would certainly not boo it, and I think as somebody who passionately wants a united Ireland down the line, I would respect the national anthem and not boo it. But I was coming into ground, I was thinking there's a fair chance this will be booed. It just had that slight atmosphere about the place. Arlene Foster was in the ground. Simon Coveney tweeted afterwards, like,
great atmosphere.
Yeah, well, he did. He also tweeted about, like, you know, the morons, I think he called them, who booed the national anthem. And then perhaps Shane Coleman spoke some more, and I'm not sure that the Northern Ireland fans would have booed Aron Levine if we hadn't booed their anthem, which is possibly true, but there would have been a section of them who would have. So that was quite, like, it was disappointing from that perspective. And then you had James McLean, like, I thought getting a lot of unwarranted, albeit somewhat friendly abuse from the Northern Ireland fans. But apart from that, like, the fans had nothing to get remotely excited about. Apart from Darren Randolph, you know, having a really good game, it must be said. But the football itself, it just feels like we've accepted. It's kind of like, you know, when I was growing up, people went to Mass, like, and, you know, they endured it. Like, they didn't enjoy it, but they went every week, and it was dutiful. And that's like an Ireland game at the moment. You go along, you expect it to be crap. You don't really moan about it because you kind of feel, I should be there anyway. You go home, you moan about how rubbish it was, and you get on with your life.
Yeah, like going to the second leg against Denmark last year would have been like going to Mass at Christmas.
Yeah.
You go for the big occasions.
Yeah. Do you still go at Christmas?
Probably go
at
Christmas, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bit of a buzz about the
place. They kind of keep people happy, keep the parents happy.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, that was not a good experience. And I would have much preferred to be at Mass Christmas Eve than the Denmark game.
The tunes like on Christmas Eve, Johnny, are absolutely incredible.
But can you compare, like, the atmosphere at Lansdowne Road tomorrow at the rugby to last night? And that's the sad thing about where we are at the moment. Like, Irish rugby, probably never been at a better stage. And in my lifetime, Irish football has certainly never been at a worse stage. And
it's a convenient juxtaposition, isn't it? We are going to get into the rugby in just a moment. We do want to just play one more clip just to kind of sum everything up beautifully. Here is Jonathan Walters describing the feeling of watching Ireland play. He was speaking on the Keith Andrews show yesterday afternoon.
So what do you want to see tonight then? What's the main part of the game or aspect?
I want to see a win.
We're all craving.
Yeah, I think it breeds confidence when you win, and it'll be a massive boost for everyone. But I want to see some, you know, we've touched up on it and I've played in it the past few years. It's almost like when we're at home, we play like an away team.
Yeah,
we give the team possession. We're not really like a Liverpool or a Man City on the break where we have that pace where we go and full at it. So when you do surrender possession so much, you end up picking the ball on the edge of your box, and it's sometimes difficult to watch, and it's very difficult to play in as a player. So I know the players will want to be getting on the ball and making things happen. You want to see chances, you want to see an exciting game, but the end result, you know, I think we need to win.
Gary O'Sullivan's been in touch on Twitter to say, talk about the rugby. This is too depressing for a Friday, and I'm with you there, Gary.
Gary's like, you know, it's Friday. I'm in good form about the weekend, and these lads are just, you know, continuing the theme of moaning about Ireland. But John Walters is very candid, isn't he?
Very candid. He summed it up very well. There's been a lot of candid commentary as well coming in on social media. Graham's been in touch to say, Stephen Kenny, get him in. What do we have to lose? People are done with this. Denmark will hockey us. I was saying yesterday on the betting show that Martin O'Neill would be better served if we're out of the equation with Denmark kind of knocking us out before we actually get to our house, because we won't have to go and win a game and we won't get embarrassed, because they will hockey us if they need to hockey us. Shane's saying, we are shocking at football. 94 minutes, not one chance at home versus Northern Ireland. I won't be watching them for the first time ever on Monday. That is a sad state of affairs. Can't blame you, Shane. Can imagine there'll be a few people joining him. I will watch them I'm not sure. I'd say the travelling support hour used to be decent because, you know, it's a trip to Denmark.
I kind of watched the game in Denmark, and in a strange way, I wouldn't be disappointed if we were hockeyed, because I think it'll put more pressure on O'Neill. Because I would love Stephen Kenny to get the job. And looking at our defensive performance last night, and particularly when they had the ball, if there's any sort of a press on our team, and we do try to play football to any extent, like, we're very vulnerable, and Denmark could beat us quite comfortably. But I do want this rain to end, definitely. I think Stephen Kenny, I genuinely think Dundalk would have played better than Ireland last night, without doubt, like, inferior players. He would have had more confidence about them. They would have created a chance or two, which is something that we're not capable of at the moment.
Yeah, Michael kind of agrees with you there. It's over for O'Neill. It's been obvious for a while now.
He doesn't look capable of finding out why things are going wrong at the moment. He doesn't seem to have the answers. He seems as befuddled as everyone else as to how crap we are.
Yeah, his problem-solving skills have kind of been required now for about 12 months, and they just haven't really come to the fore.
He looks like he'd be better served by doing a few bits around the house.
We all would. We all would. Believe me, it's not a bad way to spend an evening.
Better than
other alternatives. We turn to rugby. Briefly, we got about 5 minutes
what,
here.
What about the player ratings there? Did we hit a six or a seven?
Seven. Darren Randolph got a seven from Dan McDonald.
I think he deserved an eight.
Probably did, actually.
Randolph had a really good game. After that, like, you could basically just go five, just not looking for whatever, five, four, six, you know, Troy.
John Egan got a six, Coleman got a six, Callum Robinson got a six, Glenn Whelan got a six.
Someone got a four at the bottom there.
Martin O'Neill.
Yeah. I suppose, did he merit a four?
Stuck with the same formation, but this was a step back from October. Under pressure to salvage something from the year in Aarhus, which is true. We do want to mention just one rugby article before we get to Darren Cleary and the morning sports headlines. It's Hugh McKenna's article, which I wasn't sure we'd talk about it or not this morning, because naturally when it comes to a lot of articles like this, you kind of see it on Twitter and you see the response on Twitter and you're like, oh, well, that must be a terrible piece because people are so angry about it. But then actually you read the piece, which is kind of an important factor of actually forming an argument about an article.
A lot of people on Twitter, like, they retweet and moan about stuff they haven't actually looked at.
Yeah. And, like, I would, to be fair, I can see why people would read the first half of the article and, you know, disagree with it quite heavily. I would respectfully disagree with the first half of this article where he talks about Ireland New Zealand not being the biggest game in rugby this weekend, which I think it's, I completely disagree with that. I think it clearly is. It's one of the biggest test matches of this year. And he does go into, though, an argument in the second half of the article, which, I don't know, I'm not sure that I totally disagree with. I think we've actually got to hear this bit out. And he talks about the glitz of the international rugby scene, about test rugby, about the commercial elements of it all, and the connection it has with international rugby, and the connection that the Irish public have with that guise of rugby. Because that's what it is. It is a guise of rugby. It is not what rugby is all about. What rugby is all about, I would say, is the grassroots. It is going to support your AIL club, it is going to support your local team, your underage teams, whatever it may be. That the vast cohort, when Neil Francis talks about Ireland being rugby's game, when that manifests itself in reality, it's the fact that over a million people are watching the Six Nations on Virgin Media or RTÉ back in the day. That's what that is. It is the fact that the All Blacks ticket hunt this week has been ferocious. And that guise of rugby is absolutely thriving. And Ewan McKenna is making that point, that he says it's a nonsense that rugby can be described as Ireland's game because of this. I'm not sure necessarily how you actually disagree with that, but I would say respectfully that there's nothing entirely wrong with that. Personally, if I was from a place that, you know, had...
Well, so you're strong, from Kerry, like,
well, that's
so.
The thing. If I came from a place that had a strong rugby culture, I'd like to think I'd go to more club games than I do. That number at the moment is zero. When I say club games, I obviously mean AIL, I mean lower division stuff. Even at the moment, as coming from some place that would have a stronger GAA background, I struggle to get to club GAA games. So, again, I would kind of disagree with that point. It's like, how does that separate rugby from anyone else? Like, the idea of commercialization, the idea of elitism being the thing that interests most people in the country, that maintains that every other part of sport. Like, okay, the Irish soccer team isn't exactly a great example at the moment, given the attendance last night.
Yeah.
But certainly when you compare it to the League of Ireland historically, vast differences this century, vast differences in GAA this century, and the same goes for rugby. So I think everything Ewan is saying here, not everything, a large portion of what he's saying is true, but I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that, or I don't think anything separates rugby in that manner from other sports. And I don't know, sometimes it might be a kind of a convenient way of saying that, oh, this is just a friendly tomorrow. something that, that's a personal point that I would heavily disagree with, that clearly this is a test match that is hugely important. Just
we don't beat the All Blacks, like, so, you know, the chance to beat the All Blacks, and we're like, we're only like 15 days, marginal outsiders, so like, it's a historic thing that may happen. But I think your point is right. No, it's a kind of a convoluted article, in the sense, like, Ewan is, I think he's gone off Twitter for a week because he's had a lot of probably reaction to this article, I presume.
Yes, I'd imagine so.
Which is kind of weird, because it's not like you know, he hailed the KKK. It's not like he made these outlandish comments or anything. It's like he's just basically making the point that Ireland isn't rugby country. It's not like, it's not our main sport. Like,
I would say that Ewan is putting forward an opinion here that's based in fact, and he believes his opinion is right. I would actually go as far as to say that he's not even looking for a reaction from this piece. This is what he genuinely thinks. I disagree with what he's saying.
Do you think he's looking for a reaction in other pieces? Or
I think anybody who's working as a journalist in the 21st century looks at the reaction that they get. And yeah, if it gets a big reaction, is a big reaction a good reaction? Well, that's up to the journalist themselves.
Like, I don't know Ewan. Like, my take on Ewan is that he just can't be so negative about everything, because he just seems to, like, I think on his Twitter bio, he's like, you know, seemingly unending intolerance of bullshit or something like that. But I just can't believe he passionately cares about all these things he's writing about quite as much as it's conveyed in the article, and which are generally excellently written. So I don't know if he really cares about this at all, or if he cares as much about, like, Dublin getting what he deems to be disproportionate money from the GAA, and all this other stuff. So that's fair enough anyway. So now he's talking about rugby, but his basic point is, like, who goes to AIL games? Like, rugby is very, very cool at the moment. Like, so, like, say if you're talking to a girl in a bar, she's far more likely to talk to you about rugby now than she is about the Irish international football team. And if, particularly, I lived in Dublin so long, it's trendy. Like, you know, you don't get like as many, like, women going to games is interesting in terms of where sport is at. You won't get women at League of Ireland games, but you'll get a lot of women at GA games. You get a lot of women at rugby games.
That's, and just kind of more of a mass appeal.
Yeah, like,
it's
they...
It's just more people in general. It's just more people from different areas of life.
Yeah, but we're very good at rugby, and it's become a real pub thing as well. So if you go to the pub, like, the pubs will be heaving tomorrow for the Ireland game. Like, so, like, only 50,000 or whatever can go. Ireland and provincial rugby has become a huge thing. But yeah, the AIL, like, in terms of the grassroots, like, do you know anyone who goes to AIL games?
Not really, but I would say that rugby is further down the line. And I would say, again, kind of to disagree with you in here, I would say that rugby is just at a more advanced stage to what GAA is. And I think that GAA people, when you see Brian Cody speaking about the potential dystopian future of club GAA, they have to look at the AIL, and there is your warning right there. We could have this conversation in 20 years and be saying, who's going to club GAA matches anymore, outside of the diehards who are related to the lad who's playing wing back that day? Like, that's a very fair point. Like, that, they are 20 years ahead of, 25, 30 years ahead of the GAA when it comes to elitism. Rugby is professional since 95. If GAA turns professional in 5 years' time, we will see this future as well. And that's my point. It's not unique to rugby. The one thing he does say, though, is that, you know, will we care about Ireland beating the All Blacks tomorrow if we lose in a quarter final next year? And it, again, feeds into this idea that, you know, it's not a competition. The Six Nations matters, the World Cup matters, nothing else matters in rugby. I disagree with that, yeah, but I think there's a nub of a point there. Will we care about the All Blacks tomorrow if we lose out in a quarter final next year? Yes, we will, but we'll care more about the defeat next year in the quarter final. Two different things in two different competitions in two different areas can coexist, and they can both be important, yeah, at different levels.
Like, I don't know why Ewan seems to focus on that so much, because Ireland beating the All Blacks tomorrow would mean a hell of a lot to it would give me a bit of a kind of a boost to somebody who's not really interested in rugby. He's like, great, we've beaten the All Blacks, the country's going to be in good form for the next day or two. It does matter. Like, these are not like friendly games in football. They do matter. And Ireland beating the All Blacks would have a monumentally positive effect on people. I'm sure the bar trade, for example, across Ireland will take a massive boost if we win this game.
Huge,
so it does matter. And down the line, how relevant it is in terms of us beating them in the World Cup, I don't really care. So I don't know why Ewan makes that point, really.
Yeah, true. I also don't understand why he's got such a huge backlash on Twitter for this, because, as I say, I think there's points well made there, but there's points that I think a lot of people disagree with. I don't think it's like kind of a disgraceful piece, as you say. He hasn't like hailed the KKK here or anything. I think it's an opinion that's honestly held. And
yeah, like, but again, it's just the, you know, the shithouse that social media is for much of it. It's just, you know, a lot of the time you just, like, Ewan should not be too, like, if he got, I don't know how many comments he got for that piece, but like you should spend, as a general rule, and I say this to everyone, spend less time on social media. In general, just spend less time on your phone, spend less time on your laptop, but make sure you spend less time on social media, because by the time you're on your deathbed, you won't be like, oh my God, remember all those days I was on Twitter responding to like strangers about crap that I don't care about.
That's the deepest thing that's ever been said on OTBAM, and it's very true. We're going to turn back to the football momentarily. We want to get Darren Cleary in studio to bring you up to speed on what's happening this morning. Here's more from the Aviva. Callum Robinson and Ronan Curtis spoke to Jamie Moore.
You've just made your first Ireland appearance. What's your thoughts on your time on the pitch here at the Aviva tonight?
Oh, I'm just over the moon, really. Words can't describe how happy I am for myself and my family at the moment.
Yeah, you come on and, you know, to a fantastic reception as well. Lots of good reaction to you on Twitter. How did it actually feel when you knew, when Martin said or Roy said, warm up, you're coming on and you're standing there, your number's going up and you're ready to run on here for the first time?
Like I said, it was just words can't describe, but it was like my heart was beating so fast. It was just an amazing feeling. Like, I've been working hard in training, and as soon as he gave me the nod today, I was just buzzing.
In terms of the game itself, for the attacking players, not too many chances to report for anyone, really.
No, not that many chances for the forwards. You have to graft and you have to work hard for your chances, but like we're getting there, we're coming better now. Look at the last couple of games, we've conceded a couple. We're improving bit by bit, and we come out of the game with a clean sheet tonight.
For you, having come from the League of Ireland into League One with Portsmouth doing really well, to come here and play at the Aviva, I know it's only half full, but it's maybe still the biggest place you've played. What was that experience like in comparison to the other games you've been playing for the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's crazy, to be fair. Like, it's a brilliant stadium, to be fair, the Aviva, and that's all I wanted to do, is become an international footballer. But like, it's crazy, from coming from League of Ireland, Derry City, 4,000 packed out to, what, 45 here at a full house. So yeah, it's amazing.
And just from the point of view of the night overall, the stadium is half full. There's, at the end, you know, the fans aren't happy, a lot of them are booing. What's it like when you're an Ireland player, you know, playing these home games when the atmosphere in the stadium isn't good and it's half full?
Obviously, it's upsetting, but we have to look at ourselves as well. And as I said, we need to maybe be a little bit more brave and create more to get the fans to come to the games, which is obviously fair enough. That's their choice not to come. And hopefully in the future we can get this stadium packed out, if we can start being a little bit more positive and believing in ourselves first of all.
Is there more responsibility on the players to do more in order for that to happen?
Yeah, of course. Obviously the fans come out and come to watch and get entertained. That's why they come, and obviously they feel a little bit disappointed at the moment with us, which is fair enough. But I think we've got to sit together as a group and hopefully come out the better side after a few more trips here.
Callum Robinson there speaking to Jamie Moore after the nil-all draw last night. Ronan Curtis was the voice you heard just before that. Darren Cleary, a very good morning to you.
Is it a good morning, Owen?
It's a great morning.
It's just morning. Morning will suffice today.
Every morning that comes around is a good morning.
Kevin Kilbane has a DJ set tonight. Isn't this true?
That hasn't made my roundup, Johnny.
That
but
is not something we can reveal. You did not hear that.
He doesn't have a DJ set tonight.
There may be a secret guest slot at a prominent nightclub in Dublin tonight.
In the days of social media, we'll get out.
It probably will, to be honest with you. Now it's definitely getting out. And it wasn't me who brought it up, so thank you very much. I was very worried it would get out and it would be me who let it slip, so thankfully it's...
I didn't know it was all like hush-hush.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, it's very much
anyway, it makes it a good... It is a good day.
Sources say that Kevin Kilbane is playing a DJ set.
Sources close to him.
But sometimes sources are wrong.
Yeah. They are. It may not be happening.
Darren, what have you got?
Republic of Ireland manager Martin O'Neill says his tactics are not the problem anymore. His side outplayed for much of the game. They clung on, though, to secure a 0-0 draw. The boys in green have just one win in their last 10 matches. That came against the USA. Martin O'Neill now joint lowest win ratio of modern Republic of Ireland managers. Here's the stats on the screen. Brian Kerr tops that list. 55% win out of 33 games. Then Big Jack, Mick, Trapp, Stan and Mon now level, 35% win ratio. O'Neill has had 54 international games. Stan only had 17 games. So it is likely owned that those stats will change. And Martin O'Neill at some stage will have the joint, the now the lowest after the next game or the game after that, lowest win ratio of any Republic of Ireland manager in the modern era.
The Stan comparison is particularly damning because yes, nobody has any fondness for that kind of the memories of that regime.
But it's not even the lack of fondness. It's just pure poison that's spouted about that regime. It's like, this is the worst thing that ever happened to Irish football. Mm. People are still talking about it as a legacy event for Irish football. So
it's
basically,
because it destroyed the legacy of a wonderful player, like yes, a guy who had so much stock in the game.
Absolutely.
And so much respect for what he actually did on the pitch for Ireland. He's now kind of seen as a bit of a joke character.
Completely.
It's horrible.
It is horrible. So, Martin O'Neill in Aarhus next Monday is fighting to become a better manager than Steve Staunton.
I think, in fairness,
statistically,
statistics are very misleading.
Yes.
You would have to look at, I'd say, the mean level of player he has at his disposal at the moment relative to those managers.
Stan had a far better team.
Yeah, like Stan would have had relatively decent players. Like
Trapp had a far better team. Well, not a far better team. Like Nick McCarthy clearly had
Brian
a far Carr, better
Brian
team.
Carr had,
I don't understand this argument. I put up that stat yesterday and everyone said, yeah, but look at the players. That's fine enough. I accept that those people had a better group of players to work with. But we are paying that manager more than we paid any of those people.
Yeah.
So if the players are so rubbish, and if it is such a fruitless exercise and nothing can be done with that group of players, well, stop spending £2 million a year to pay someone to try and get the best out of them. It is absolutely mind-boggling that O'Neill, by trashing the players as much as he does and pointing out the limitations they have as often as he does, it seems like fans are starting to buy into this. Well, O'Neill is actually doing a fine job.
Mm. I don't think they think he's doing a fine job, but I think...
But they believe him, Johnny, when he says that the players are rubbish and I'm doing my best and I challenge anyone to do
I
better.
I think so. I think you're bang on there.
I agree.
There is definitely an element of
repetition. This is where, if Stephen Kenny did get the job, you'd have, like... Stephen Kenny would never be negative. It would always be positive. And the players and the people would actually start believing that, you know, and it recalls the old adage, like, a lie told often enough becomes the truth. But
yeah,
Martin O'Neill kind of consistently saying that, he said, we deserve the booze last night. Again, it's just feeding into that we're just not very good. And I totally agree. He's like, he's paid a lot of money. But I would point out that we have a particularly kind of substandard bunch at the moment in terms of, certainly relative to those managers, even Stan.
Yeah, that is a fair point. But I think I would prefer a manager who would try and get the best out of the group of players he has. Like, Callum Robinson is in fine form for his club. He's got 8 goals this season.
He's
better than his tally for last season. He is a very, very capable and competent player. But the problem with the capable and competent players when they play for Ireland is I don't think they know what they're doing. And if they do, they certainly don't show it. So either it's an indictment of the players that they're not good enough to execute the game plan, or it's an indictment of O'Neill that there's no discernible game plan.
Well, like, all the reports from training suggest they don't do a lot of work. Like, you know, in the short time frame that you have with the players at international level, you've got to get a lot in. And look how well Northern Ireland functioned last night as a team with a similarly, if not slightly more limited, bunch of players. And compare that to us, who just, they look like 3-5-2 was just invented last night. They'd never seen it before. Like, they're all just totally unsure of their brief. And as I said earlier on, we are quite bad, but we're not that bad.
No,
but,
and that's,
you
know, that
the players
is the point.
Are not that bad. Yeah. And O'Neill has paid an obscene amount of money, as is Roy Keane, to do what looks to be a very, very bad job at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the comparison with Kenny is very interesting. Because, Johnny, I don't know if you saw his programme notes for the last home league game of the season with Dundalk, and he kind of touched on stuff that it made seem like he was speaking generally about Irish football. But that very same week, O'Neill said, we don't have the players of technical ability. And Kenny made the point of, we shouldn't talk down Irish players because Irish players are not born with a defect in their technical ability. This idea that Irish players are incapable of being technically good footballers is rubbish. Mm. And I think that is the kind of person I would like leading my team. Someone who'll put the hand around the shoulder and say, you are good. You can get the best out of your ability. Whelan had a really good interview with Aidan Fitzmaurice in the Herald yesterday where he made the point where, I never said I was a gifted technical footballer, but I basically dragged every drop out of my ability. And that's what we need to get from these players. And Martin O'Neill, over the last 10 games and longer, hasn't shown any signs that he is the man to get that from the players.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, O'Neill and Roy Keane have been presented with lemons, and they're not intent on making lemonade whatsoever. They're not intent, as you say, on squeezing the last drop out of that. We do want to take one
and
quick...
it's quite sour as well.
It's incredibly. Here's a photograph that's just come to our attention. We've got a caption contest going on. So this kind of feeds into what Johnny was saying. It's DJ Kev. We can neither confirm nor deny that
this
he will
isn't
be performing
helping me at all
over the weekend.
Who is he with here? I should know this, but who is he with here?
I think that's Groove Armada.
That's Groove Armada.
On the left and Armada on the right.
I'm actually staying in the Spanish Armada, a hotel in Clare next weekend. Oh, in an unrelated matter, but it's good that we're moving on to Kev and taking it away from getting back to again. If you are a kid, like, and you're kind of a floating voter, you're a typical child, like, and you remember the days of watching the Irish team and all that, and we weren't great to watch, but we won a lot of games and everyone was hyped up about it. You're watching now as a kid, watching, like, this must be, for a kid with an even shorter attention span than we had because of modern life, it must be incredibly hard to watch that last night.
They just wouldn't watch it.
It's so boring.
Kids are watching full games of football anyway, and they're certainly not watching Ireland against Northern Ireland.
But the problem isn't that it's quite grim at the moment. The problem is that the prospects show absolutely no signs of improving. And when I was that age, I wanted to be Matty Holland, I wanted to be Robbie Keane, I wanted to be these players.
Matty Holland?
Yeah, I just like Matty Holland. I really like what he did.
Yeah.
More than Roy Keane for some strange reason. You
preferred Matty Holland to Roy Keane?
No, I just
I was a class hipster.
This reminds me
as
of
a kid. I did, because I knew I wasn't as good as Roy Keane.
I
found someone that I thought you were as good as Matty Holland.
I thought that was more achievable. I said to my father, like, I want to be fresh in football when I was quite young. He's like, let's be realistic. You're not. And it's like I don't want to be like one of these great players. I could survive being a Jeff Kenna. You know, because I was a right back as well. So that's, I think, where you're coming from.
That is exactly where I'm
from. I'm more plausibly a Matt Holland down the line than Roy Keane.
Yeah, that was my point. But I don't think any of the kids watching that tonight, or last night, are grown up wanting to be those guys on the pitch.
Maybe
they didn't
a goalkeeper.
Do much. Maybe a goalkeeper.
Yeah, or maybe that guy who plays for Oxford, who had that chance for Northern Ireland. His name escapes my mind. That's how bad it is. I've already kind of compartmentalised all the events of last night and just forgotten everything I've already seen. But the fact of the matter is, the kids aren't wanting to be anybody last night because it was a terrible performance. And it's
I love the fact of the matter is, and then you produce something that's not really factual. No.
Well, I think it's close.
The fact of the matter is, the kids of today. I mean, there's an oxymoron.
There
straight
we
away.
Go. Look, we talk about
it's
a good.
Grim.
We talk
it's
about
grim,
a good grim, sports grim. Team.
They don't want to be Irish players.
A good sports team. Joe Schmidt believes some of the strange decisions made by the referee during Ireland's 2016 meeting with the All Blacks in Dublin has created animosity between the side. Sam Kane and Melikai Fekitoa both sided after the All Blacks' 21-9 victory over Ireland that year. Fekitoa saw yellow for a high tackle on Simon Zebo, but Kane escaped sanction for a hit on Robbie Henshaw that left him stretchered off with a concussion. Schmidt believes that game has created some bad blood.
There were some decisions made by the referee that day that befuddled everybody, and I don't think there's any confusion with that. But at the same time, you know, we've got to get out there and give as good as we get, and that's what's going to make it a fairly spiky sort of contest this weekend, I would think.
Donegal plan to object to Dublin having home advantage should they make the Super 8s next summer. The GAA Central's Competitions Control Committee unlikely to change the arrangements that give Dublin home advantage for Croke Park, as well as playing their neutral venue game there as well. Donegal chairman Mick McGrath has told the Irish Times that they feel Dublin are getting an unfair advantage, quoted as saying today, "We do feel very strongly about this and we're the ones jumping up and down about it last season. We're not pointing the finger at Dublin, but we don't think any county should have two games in Croke Park for the Super 8s. For Dublin to declare Croke Park as home venue in the Super 8s and also have a designated neutral venue isn't a level playing field. We're certainly not letting that issue go, and I think there is concern about this in other counties as well." In golf, Rory McIlroy is just two shots now off the pace at the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. The Ulsterman hit back-to-back birdies in the opening two holes to climb to 5-under par. He bogeyed on three. He dropped back to 1-under for the day, 4-under for the tournament. Shane Lowry, 3-under now. Paul Dunn, 2-under. Wade Ormsby, Jordan Smith and Adrian Otegu share the lead on 6-under, while Kelly Harrington flies the flag for Ireland at the AIBA World Women's Elite Championships in India later. The Dubliner fights New Zealand's Troy Garton in the lightweight division. The winner will advance to the last 16 of the competition. Kira Smith, Michaela Walsh, Amy Broadhurst and Aoife O'Rourke also fight for Ireland this week. Well, five Irish fighters go for gold at the Unified World MMA Championships this Saturday in Bahrain. Lee Hammond, Trevor McCangu, Paddy Wilkinson, Ryan Spillane and Jer Harris all won their respective semi-finals yesterday. The five-day Nation versus Nation Amateur MMA Tournament takes place as part of the Brave International Combat Week. It features 362 competitors from more than 50 nations across 16 weight divisions. So to get five Irish Irish fighters into gold medal fights. An incredible, incredible achievement. Niall McGrath will talk more about that. While a number of referees are planning to use the rock, paper, scissors method at kickoff to show support for a suspended official, they are unhappy at the decision to ban David McNamara for 3 weeks after he used that in place of a coin toss. He forgot his coin in the dressing room before the Women's Super League match between Man City and Reading last month. It ended in a 1-1 draw. Keith Hackett, who was the head of the professional game match officials for 6 years, described the punishment as draconian. McNamara might appeal, as a coin is technically not listed in the rules of the game as a compulsory item of equipment, yet a coin toss is required to decide kickoffs. Referees at some grassroots level, according to the BBC, are reportedly planning to use rock, paper, scissors as a show of support. It remains to be seen whether this will be the dozens or the hundreds, but it certainly there appears to be some kind of protest arranged for the weekend.
Nice one, Darren. Here's Matt Williams on Ireland against New Zealand. He was speaking on Wednesday Night Rugby this week.
You know, I'm quite surprised about the bubble that is Irish rugby. And a lot of the same conversations seem to go, and I think have I missed something? Am I really saying the right thing here? And sometimes I always find myself being the bad guy, and I certainly hate doing that because I love Irish rugby and I'm deeply respectful for what Irish rugby's given me in my life. Mm. But I just think there's a little air of entitlement about the place at the moment that we're all of a sudden we're entitled to beat New Zealand. We're entitled to these things. And I'm sort of going, geez, that's when you get that air, that's trouble. Like, you know, the New Zealanders are coming to Ireland with one intent, and that is to, with the greatest respect and humility that the New Zealanders do carry themselves with and pride, and I've got nothing but respect for the way the New Zealand rugby players carry themselves and speak in public. They are true gentlemen. But they are coming here to jam it down Irish throats. Chicago does not sit well with them. Mm. I've heard that firsthand. I've heard it from New Zealand players when I was in New Zealand last year. And not that they were coming here then, but they were very unhappy with the result in Chicago. And I believe they're coming here with intent. And this is their big game on tour. Mm. Not England, mm. Ireland.
Matty Williams there speaking to Joe on Wednesday Night Rugby this week. Alan Quinlan, a very good morning.
Morning. Oh, how are you?
Good work on the roadshow this week. It's getting a big reaction. Oh, yeah. Have you spoken to Eddie O'Sullivan since?
I always speak to Eddie. I haven't spoken to him since Wednesday, but he knows that story. It wasn't Eddie's fault. It was my fault.
I think we're just going to fix your microphone there. I don't think it's turned on.
I'm interested in the story that he's talking about, though.
Will you
Eddie O'Sullivan.
Eddie O'Sullivan, not really speaking to you after a tour down in New Zealand few years back.
What happened?
To an extent, to us all who didn't actually catch the roadshow.
Eddie didn't really. I probably frustrated him a little bit, and just didn't. He didn't want to engage with me too much. He picked me a fair bit, but didn't want to chat to me too much. But that's not his fault. It was probably more my fault.
Yeah, it's an interesting coach-player dynamic. The full thing is up on YouTube if anybody wants to catch it. But we do want to get into this weekend's game. And Ronan O'Gara this morning in the Examiner, because Adrian always mentions Roger on a Friday, so I said I may as well do it as well, just makes a very obvious point. And he admits that it's an obvious point that Joe Schmidt is a Kiwi. In previous iterations of playing New Zealand, it'd be a little bit of guesswork going into them. That's really removed when you've got a fellow who's got so much inside information.
Yeah, look, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what the All Blacks do and their culture, and particularly if you're someone who's played against them or been involved. And a lot of the Irish guys, like Ron, would have played 13 times against New Zealand, so he knows them inside out. He's coaching there now as well. Joe obviously coached there. He knows the culture, and so it's not kind of rocket science. There's no kind of secrets that they know. One thing that I know, and any of the Irish guys who ever played against New Zealand would know, is they can blow you away, they can intimidate you, they can bully you, they have an aura about the jersey, and they use that aura and intimidate and maybe set a standard that sometimes teams can't live, and then before you know the game is gone and you're 20, 30 points down, and they're so efficient and good with the way they play. So I think anyone who likes rugby would probably be an All Black fan. It's very understandable because they're probably the greatest team, the rugby team that I've ever played. Are they beatable? Well, you have to get a hell of a lot of stuff right to get a result anytime anybody beats New Zealand in any era. So they're a very dominant side, and there's a lot of pride and tradition in that jersey. So you have to kind of overcome that stuff to deal with, can we get 15 guys out in the field and get a plan in place? Mentally, you've got to believe and have that confidence. And I think the Irish team have, you know, that's what got them that kind of success. We've come close a number of times. 2013 was the heartbreak right at the end when Crotty scores in the corner. So thankfully we've beaten, we've kind of got that banana, or, you know, that potential banana skin that we always spoke about. Mm. And, but, you know, Joe Schmidt, he does so much analysis and assessing of every team he plays anyway. So this will be, you know, there's nothing different about this. He'll be looking at little ways of any sort of weaknesses or maybe cynical little things they do to give that information to these players to be careful about clean outs or blocking or, you know, lines of running that they do. So,
What will have those kind of chats been like this week? What was the big focus in your perspective?
I think, and I'm not privy to what they've said this week, but I haven't watched New Zealand, and I'm talking about that pressure that they put on in attack and defence. One thing that they do, and technically it's not legal, is off scrums. And Beauden Barrett scored a try against Ireland, the game in the Aviva 2 years ago, where he takes the ball incredibly flat off a scrum, and he got past Sexton. Because he's so quick and he scored under the post. Sexton got back and grabbed him going over the line, but it was a try, he scored. They take the ball so flat, which is by the letter of the law, it's illegal. Neither team, attack or defence, are supposed to advance until the ball is passed out of the scrum. You're supposed to be 5 yards back either side of the scrum.
And he's level with the player.
When he takes the pass, he's flat. And he's so quick, and they score a lot of tries from first phase off scrums. They've scored 14 tries this year off first phase off scrums. So if you can imagine someone like Beauden Barrett going full tilt, and he's out, you're 10 yards apart, he's now, after taking five of those, going full tilt, you're maybe at a standing start. Well, then it's hard to adjust your feet because he's so deceptive.
Huge, your reaction time.
You've got to try and meet him in the middle.
Do you think referees are like afraid to confront him because the New Zealand?
No, I think a lot of teams are trying to do it. Australia trying to do it, and you know, everyone tries to take it flat and gain that little bit of advantage. The problem I have, Johnny, is referees are pinging the opposition for meeting him and going early and meeting him halfway, which I think is unfair. So for Ireland tomorrow to stop that. And stop them getting over the game line really, really early and quickly. They've got to meet him halfway.
But surely Wayne Barnes notices that, no?
Well, that's something that I think Joe Schmidt will have picked up on and have those conversations. The other one is the line-out. So similar concept. You're back 10 yards. The line-out is here. You're back 10 yards each team. Beauden Barrett is not supposed to advance until the ball is passed or the line-out is over. Now, there's five ways the line-out can be over. It's taken down, driven a yard, it's over. Where the backs can advance, it's taken off the top, so the line-out is over. It moves into the 5 yard channel in a maul, the line-out's over. Over the 15, it's over, or an overthrow. So there are five ways that the line-out is complete. Then you can advance forward and attack and defence. But again, Barrett is right on that flat line. Now, Sonny Bill Williams doesn't play tomorrow, but he runs that little pocket 12, and he's so hard to stop. But Crotty is more of a footballing 12, but he just still runs good lines. But Barrett himself is he's an incredible runner with the ball. But a lot of his attack is so flat that a defender is standing there and they're looking inwards for a second, and next minute, boom, your man has gone through a gap. He's so flat. So Ireland have to be very careful with that. If you stop him on the gain line or before the gain line, even better. But if they get over your gain line, that's when they're lethal. And, you know, the game opens up, the ruck is quick. Aaron Smith's delivery is brilliant. So I think there are two key areas. Off scrum, that Ireland can meet that attack on our gain line or even behind New Zealand's. And don't get pinged for it by Wayne Barnes, because you're asking me that, Johnny, about that. And the same in the line-out. So Dan Levy off the tail of the line-out. So does he have to stay inside the 15 and Barrett is up here and it's impossible to get across to him? Then he's, you know, they're kind of two key areas. But they're very good. For me, saying New Zealand are cynical, coming from me, the way I played the game, not consciously trying to go out and give away penalties, but it's just the nature of the way I played, being really competitive. They have a lot of guys, and it seems to be a standard for them that They have to compete for everything, 110%, everywhere. They give away a lot of penalties in their own 22. And one of the things that they do, and it came, like there was a glaringly obvious yellow card for Kieran Reid in 2016. Under the post, Ireland had a scrum after 20 minutes. I think the score was 7, it could have been 14-3. They had scored two early tries with Feketoa and Barrett. And we had a scrum under the post, driving them back. Their scrum just split up and Kieran Reid just ran around the back of the scrum. And Jamie Heaslip, he was trying to pick the ball from Jamie Heaslip's feet. So Jakob Piper had already given the penalty. So he made a conscious decision, well, it's a penalty anyway, I'm just going to go and give another penalty.
It should have been a yellow
because if he allowed that scrum to continue, it was probably going to be a try. So he ran around and it was just a penalty. And he wasn't yellow carded. Now, there was three or four incidents in that game.
It was a shocking refereeing day.
Well, Jakob Piper was the referee. And I don't blame New Zealand because they pushed the law to the limits, which I did as a player at times. And they were physical. You know, they were beaten in Chicago. They didn't want it to happen again. So they were quite angry after the game, Steve Hansen was, when he was asked a few times about, were you players dirty, were they cynical, you know, and he got frustrated and angry about that. And he's got to try and defend these players. So it's not as if I, you know, you push the boundaries a little bit, but I think that's why Wayne Barnes is really has to be strong tomorrow. So the penalty situation, so Kieran Reid decided then, well, there's already a penalty advantage coming, so I'm just going to kill
it
again.
Yeah, like what would you do? If you knew that you were going to get away with that, of course you're going to do that.
And if you watch New Zealand, if you have a penalty in the 22 and they give away a penalty and they know it's an advantage and a team plays over back, they will potentially give away a penalty in the next ruck, the next ruck, the next ruck.
The end justifies the means. Like.
Yeah, so and those they'll back up that with three penalties. So they're saying there's a penalty coming. We're not now going to let the team play and try and score. We're just going to be illegal in every breakdown and stop them and come up offside. Because the referee just runs back then and said, no advantage, penalty in the corner, you know, from where the first one came from. But I think that's where he needs to be strong and say, well, and you know, because Ireland's discipline is really good and their penalty count is quite low. Now, New Zealand's penalty count was very low last week against England. I think it was only 4 or 5. But I think if you get them into 22, they have this policy of, well, we'll give away the penalty, you can kick a shot at goal, it's only 3 points. We're going to go down the field, anyone score tries. So,
do you believe the referee will be strong enough to ensure that those 3 points might not turn into, or they should turn into 7 when they should turn into 7?
Well, if they don't turn into 7, they should turn into a yellow card if there's a repeat infringement and if they're offside or if they do something like that. Now, how do you police that yourself if you're an Irish player? It's very hard because Ireland's players... And it's a big emphasis on their success is being really disciplined. And maybe it's a good tactic and a good ploy to maybe say, well, there's a penalty here anyway. We're not going to let you play now and try and score in the other corner or make a line break. Go back and take your penalty. You're not getting any more here from us.
Yeah.
So
it's very interesting stuff. Like it's going to be one. I hope we're not talking about it too much in the aftermath of the game.
But look, they're a super side on. Yeah. They're very dangerous and they're great players. And I fear that we're undercooked a little bit. We've won performance. I know Argentina last week, and I kind of said this, that it was possibly a good thing that we played poorly. You know, this week's going to be different. But they have 11 test matches played this year. They have 3 against France, 6 in the Rugby Championship. They played Japan and England. So, are they tired? Are they fatigued? Are they thinking about holidays? No, they're looking at this one now and saying, well, we get the job done here and we can go to Italy next week and we can make a few changes and enjoy that week better. They certainly will not want to lose to Ireland. So that will make them angry. Are we good enough to cope with that? Yes, we have a number of world-class players on our team now who are mentally strong. They have that winning mentality. I just think to turn it on as quickly as we probably will need to tomorrow might be, a step too far for us. Are we capable of winning the game? Absolutely. We need to pull something out of the bag that stretches them.
Is that going to be in the kicking game, I wonder? Can we target Damien McKenzie?
We can target all of their players with a kicking game. I think our kicking game has been one of our strengths. New Zealand kick a lot as well.
Mm. Like Hansen's quotes yesterday saying when Ireland get frustrated, they just kick it up into the air.
There's a perception that New Zealand don't kick. Like I looked at some of their stats. They're up in mid-30s. I think they kicked mid to late 30s last week. You know, Ireland kicked 19 times last week. Eddie Jones said this a few years ago against England, when we played England over in Twickenham, and I went and I checked the stats, and England actually were a team that kicked more than Ireland. So sometimes you need to know your numbers and your facts. New Zealand kicked the ball a fair bit. Now, we know their incredible ability to go to the length of the field and score tries. So it'll be really interesting. And I think physically, Ireland have to watch and match Whitelock and Retallick. They're their enforcers, and they're two key players that they break up mauls. They're very effective in breakdown. They're very physical in their carries. They give a lot of good points of contact for New Zealand to attack off. Reid as well, if he has a big influence in the game, I think, you know, when he plays well and goes forward well, New Zealand play well. So there's an emphasis on James Ryan, Toner, Stander. Our back row need to play well too, you know, and Levy as well, to be physical on Sevilla, physical at the breakdown. So if we can frustrate them, like England did last week. England got on their faces and frustrated them.
Yeah, are we going to win?
Ultimately.
I don't know. I think we may lose by a couple of points. You know, are we capable of winning? Yes. Mm. Would I be surprised if we won? No. But I just think that maybe they're going to be a bit better organised than us, and they might be that little bit good. Their execution is superb at times. And in saying that, they haven't hit their straps yet. They've shown vulnerabilities. And one thing that Rod said, I just had him on there, and I spoke to him about this a few times during the week, is you need to have patience with New Zealand. If you think you're going to score really quickly against them, you know, you need to build patiently at times. And then if you have the ball for a long time, they're not used to teams having a huge amount of possession against them. That's where hopefully you can ask a few questions. So Ireland have to be clinical, and if a chance or two comes, I just think of Chicago 2 years ago, and why did we win the game? Because we were ambitious.
Yeah, ballsy that day. That
like, I remember a scrum in the second half, Robbie Henshaw's try. We were in our own half on the touchline. You think normally the ball is going to go back to the 10 and we're going to kick downfield or try and punch it up the middle and look for a kick. We went right to the touchline with Zeebo. He chips the ball through. We force Sevilla in behind his own goal line and we score a try from it. And I remember thinking, this is a bit of a turning point mentally for this group and for the perception of where we go after teams. So there's going to be times tomorrow where they have to have a little bit of ambition. You throw the ball around willy-nilly, you know, you get punished as well. So I'm not advocating for that. But I think South Africa beat them a month or two months ago, maybe 6 weeks ago in the Rugby Championship in Wellington with probably 30-35% possession. And it reminded me of that match at times that South Africa just went and had that ambition to attack and really stretch New Zealand. And they looked a bit shell-shocked by it and they looked a bit porous defensively at times. So you have to get a lot of stuff right. I think there'll be a cracking game. I think there'll be a great intensity to it. And the man in the middle is kind of crucial to that, Wayne Barnes, that he polices it well for both sides, because Ireland are not squeaky clean in everything they do either.
I'm sure Wayne Barnes will. I'm sure he's been listening to everything that's been said this week and he knows exactly the importance
of
the referee.
Yeah, but he's a good referee. Like, he is a good referee. I think one area concern sometimes is allowing that contest at a breakdown. He doesn't allow a contest sometimes. So
that doesn't suit Ireland.
One turnover can change a game, you know. So we'll see. It should be a cracker anyway.
Quinny, good stuff. You'll join us again on Monday to reflect on the win. You're watching OTB AM. It's brought to you this morning with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. We're continuing the build up to the All Blacks game tomorrow. Here's former Leinster and Ireland hooker Shane Byrne on facing New Zealand and previewing tomorrow's game. He's had some pretty interesting things to say. Have a look at this. All right, Volkswagen, proud partner of Irish Rugby, will be putting Irish and New Zealand fans head-to-head in a rugby trivia quiz this Saturday at the Volkswagen Fan TV area on Lansdowne Road. Join Irish rugby legend Shane Byrne and test your rugby knowledge to win signed jerseys. For more information, see Volkswagen Ireland's social channels. And I'm delighted to say, Shane Byrne is with me in studio. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
Not too bad at all. So the All Blacks, when you see them coming to Dublin, what's the first thing you think from your own playing days? Is it kind of some sort of PTSD fear about the All Blacks, or is it happy memories?
No, neither of the above, I would say. They're the only side I never managed to beat in the international arena, and they'd probably be the only side I'd cheer for England,
right.
For them to beat them, because I you know, there's a rivalry there that is absolute. And in recent years, it's been great to see the gap narrowing all the time. And right to this stage where we can have a good debate about Saturday, which way it might go, genuinely.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll get into that, the breakdown of how this game might go. But one of the debates that has been raging on is about the cynicism of the All Blacks. And I think 2016 has been held up as an example of a time when the All Blacks came to our own backyard and really bullied us after we beat them in Chicago. But I often wonder if we're just forgetting about the past before that. Like, say, when you went there in 2005, famously, yeah. They were bullies, I think it's fair to say, lightly on that occasion. And I think perhaps on all your other occasions facing them in a green jersey as well, they showed the cynical edge and they pushed the rules to the very edge of their boundary.
And they do, and that's why it's very annoying to play against them. And because you're not just playing against the players in front of you and the tactics that they use, it's that they always get the rub of the green from the ref. There's a whole aura around them that seems to intimidate and make 50-50 decisions always go their way, which is very, very annoying when you're on the park. And they do. They have this ultimate confidence in the way that they play, that they will push the rules right to the edge. And, you know, McCaw was the ultimate player and, you know, the guy for executing that plan. But that's, you know, it's well deserved. They are the number one team in the world for the last God knows how many years, rightfully so. And every World Cup, they come up, they raise the bar. In between the World Cups, teams catch up. And I still think that process is happening at the moment. I think that, you know, Ireland leading the charge are really, really catching up and exactly the way you need to play, particularly to defeat teams like New Zealand.
Yeah, I wonder, is there anything we can learn about how they push the boundaries of those rules?
There is. Look, that's the way it is. Refs aren't there to be man of the match. Refs shouldn't be there to influence the result of the game. They should be there to protect the players, implement the rules exactly the way they are. But the analysis that's done in the opposition now at international level, there's as much analysis done on the referees to see their quirks, see the things that they're hot on, things that they're not so hot on. And you'd be damn sure New Zealand do that to the absolute T. And if they know there's something that this particular ref doesn't really watch for, they will bring it to the absolute level. They will use that to their huge advantage, and that's what they do. But there is no doubt that there's the intimidation factor, that they do intimidate referees, and we've seen so many times through the years and even in recent days where, you know, decisions that more than likely would have gone against another side, they always get it.
Yeah, and also in the last couple of days, not just in the England match, but in terms of the way Wayne Barnes has been spoken about in the media, Johnny Sexton's quotes and then the response from New Zealand. Yeah. I think fair play to Johnny Sexton.
Absolutely. And you know, I thought Wayne Barnes had gotten over the worst of his refereeing conundrums, but from last year's reffing that he did, it hasn't. As I talked about referees wanting to be the centre of attention, he loves it. Absolutely loves it. And he makes some absolutely daft decisions. And the problem with Wayne Barnes is that it's not the fact that he will make one. It's that if he makes one daft decision, he seems to want to back it up and prove the point and follows on with this ridiculous line of thinking. But, you know, Johnny Sexton, I think, framed it beautifully, or phrased it beautifully, in the simple fact is, yeah, he's penalised us loads, so therefore we have to adjust. They're going to have to realise, you know, that exactly he is hot on this topic and this topic. The problem with Wayne Barnes is that you never know what he's going to be hot on.
Yeah.
This week, you know, he flip-flops all the time. But I think Johnny Sexton did it really, really well. Is the simple fact is that you're going to have to adjust and see what he's doing during the day. If by chance it's the scrum or it's the ruck time or the back foot of the ruck or offside or the ball, you just have to adjust as a team straight away. And very much like New Zealand look to exploit that, we just have to be smart and not give him the opportunity to, you know, blow his whistle.
And that's the thing. You would like to think that it's not going to be like 2016, given the new tackle laws, that we can't get bullied in that specific way. But knowing the All Blacks, they will find some other way of really annoying our players. And that is also a key part. It's not just them getting away with things that they shouldn't be getting away with. It's also the little seed of doubt that puts into your mind. I'm not sure from your own experiences, when those decisions are going against you, how does that make you feel when you're packing down and you're like, God, I've got 16 men up against me at the moment?
Yeah, no, it is. It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating when you know that there's something incorrect going on and you can do absolutely nothing about it, and you can't do, and you can see the opposition capitalizing it all the time. But you talked about bullying there going back through the years. You know, something, you could use the definition that at all place, but I don't think New Zealand will be able to bully this Irish team, no matter what tactic they take out. They might be well able to annoy this team and frustrate them and do different things, but I don't think they'll be capable of doing it against this side, because I think that these guys have, firstly, a lot of them have played against them plenty of times. They have been on the winning side, and they now, particularly these young guys in the squad, they just don't really care who they're playing. They only want to win, and that's the only thing they're interested in, no matter who it is in front of them. They have the winning habit as we speak, which is a huge, huge thing. We've seen that going down through the years, so many teams that just have that absolute will to win and will get through no matter what it costs. And that's exactly where I think Ireland are at the moment.
It's very interesting you say that, because you start to think to yourself, what if the likes of James Ryan or Dan Levy came into an unsuccessful Irish team? Would they have as much of a winning mentality? It's amazing how important that first year of your international career is.
Yeah, but that combined psyche is something that is grown and nurtured. Like, how many times did we see a great provincial team not succeed? How many times in Irish rugby history, and a good Irish team that should have done so much better, and just for some reason that communal psyche just failed at the last hurdle or at a vital, vital stage in whatever competition they were playing in. But that's why this group of players, and it's been spearheaded by the guys like the Sexons, the O'Mahonys, who with their absolute, they've been there, done that on the bad sense of it as well, and been involved in some very, very, hurtful losses to these young guys who basically just know success. Mm. And what's that all put together is the simple fact is you have a team that want to win and will do what it takes to win, because it's a lot of times on the pitch it's pushing past that pain barrier, pushing past that, where you would normally go in a game, and just digging right down and getting over that final hurdle.
It's amazing. You could take that clip of what you just said there and people could say that's exactly the same thing you would say about the All Blacks. Mm. It's remarkable that we're building up that culture where nothing but the very best is accepted.
But you see, that's the thing that a lot of people go, like, we're number two in the world, which is great, but we deserve to be number two in the world. It's taken time to build up to that fact. And it took, a beating the then number one side in the world, who are still there, to get to that. And that's added up to it. And we have to have that psyche now. We have to believe that no matter who is out there, we have to take them on and we have to be able to challenge them. And that's what this squad of players, and Joe Schmidt has done such a good job at creating a squad of players that just are, firstly, they challenge each other, which keeps them on their toes. And secondly, that it used to be if A, B or C are missing, even if A, B are missing, we're in awful trouble. But that's not quite the case. Like, who would have thought, okay, the great Conor Murray isn't, we thought there was a secret he might have been playing, and New Zealand thought that as well. But, the step down no longer is that massive, massive gulf. That's no insult to Conor. Conor certainly hasn't changed. He is still an absolute world-class number one player around. But the guys behind him have pushed so hard, and there's three of them there who are fighting like dogs to get that number two spot. They know it's the number two spot,
yeah,
but they still want to be there, and that's what's happening. That happens right throughout the Irish squad, that whenever somebody goes down, we're missing Robbie Henshaw, who I think is one of the best players Ireland have, but Bundy Aki's going to step in there and there'll be zero issues. Every job, every basic thing that he needs to do, he will do exactly right, and a little bit more on top, and that's exactly what we need.
What did he make of Ian Foster's comments about Bundy Aki this week, saying that he looks like an Irishman?
Listen, and the New Zealand Herald digging up the old thing that we're playing against an Irish side and a New Zealander.
Yeah, well, we actually had that guy on the show this week, the author of that New Zealand Herald piece, Gregor Paul, and right. He said that it's actually different, that there is no double standard speaking as a person based in New Zealand, that their targeting of Pacific Islanders is totally different to the way we target them. But that's just a hypocrisy there, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Like, when one of the Lions test teams that I played against, I think there were only seven homegrown All Blacks on the team. The rest were Islanders or imports or something like that. Like, that, they are the epitome going right the way back to, exploiting the rules the way they are. And, as I said, that is the rules. Nobody's breaking any rules. Bundy Aki deserves to wear that green as much as anyone else, because he followed the rules of international rugby. Are the rules correct? No. and they are going to be changed. That's the way they will be. But, you know, to for them to even throw up a debate about it, like, you know, guys get schooled and earmarked from the islands long, long before they start playing representative rugby. They're brought in, they're naturalised, and then they just go up through the New Zealand ranks and they just do it a different way. But listen, we have one of the smallest playing populations. It's the fourth sport in the country. You know, of all the senior countries, we have very small numbers. So we use the rules exactly to the way we should, and absolutely zero harm in it. And one thing's for sure, Bundiaki will not be disappointed to be wearing the green at the weekend. You know, he will give absolutely everything about it. And it's an awful shame this debate is even happening anymore. Like, it's just the way it is. Everybody recognises the rule needs changed. It has changed. There we go, move on.
I do want to ask you about the tactics that we're going to see this weekend, because it's very interesting having you in the studio this week, given how intrigued I personally am about the pack and about the line-out and about the scrum this weekend, and especially given what New Zealand showed against England. Mm. We'll start with Rory Best. His performance last week was open to a bit of criticism. He was suffering with an injury throughout the summer, didn't play in Australia at his age. It's going to take a little bit longer from that. And I think we saw last season, to be honest, it was after Christmas when he really started to hit the ground running. But ultimately, there is no time in a Joe Schmidt camp when you can't be on the ground running. In your opinion, how long does it take for him to get back to that level where you're like, he's the captain, he stays in that team? Or is he really looking over his shoulder now?
I think that the nature of the whole squad is you're looking over your shoulder. I don't think even he can settle completely. You know, at some stage the clock is ticking. It's just to see how far it goes. Like last year, Six Nations, he was incredible. He was fantastic. And, you know, the one thing, he took a lot of grief about the throwing at the weekend, but to me, it wasn't. You've got to look at the line-out and analyse it, because a hooker can only put the ball into a metre space, you know, square space up in the air. And there's he can lob it a little bit more to add a bit more onto it. The jumper can lean back. But there's only so much he can do. And nearly all of the lineouts that were competed against or were sloppy ball, the ball was where it was meant to be. Mm. It was just that they were there as well. To me, the calling was the issue. And, you know, you're meant to find the space where they're not. Not have to rely on the last couple of inches. You know, it shouldn't be a case. And if you can't find a space where they're not, you call movement. You generate that space where they're not and try beat them with fast feet, with quick execution. Look, his throwing is by no means perfect, but that has to be a case. Every time people who aren't in the game go, the line-out didn't work, it's the hooker's fault. It's not the case. If you look at it and you see that ball, if the two sides are up there reaching for the ball and it's hand-tip stuff, then the throw is exactly where it's meant to be. The call is wrong. You know, it's good work by the opposition defence, but you should have it in the repertoire of the line-out that you can create a jump that isn't as closely contested as that is. And that's what we didn't do. And that's, I suppose, what Devon Toner, look, I would have loved to throw to Devon Toner. It would have been an absolute joy. But the simple fact is, it's not just his height and the height he gets off the ground. It's also the fact that his knowledge of the line-out, and he's able to find that space. He's able to use himself as a weapon when needed for the fast ball, for the high ball, but he's also able to go, right, no, we need movement to generate a little gap here that we can get that half foot higher than the opposition, because they won't be quite as ready as we are. And that's the thing that wasn't done last week.
Right, because when you unpack that, it's intriguing when you look then at the England performance then on Saturday. And to me, to the untrained eye, when you look at Dylan Hartley being replaced by Jamie George at halftime, and then pretty much all their lineouts get stolen by Brodie Retallick in the second half, I'm thinking, well, that's the hooker's fault. But really,
the New Zealanders brought their bench on, and it changed the way they defended the lineouts the same time as Jamie George came on. Now, Jamie George through a couple of howlers. There's no doubt about that. You know,
but it wasn't entirely his fault.
No, and that's what happened. And Retallick got the best of it. But it was the couple of changes they made in the forwards. They changed the way they were defending the line out. And England didn't adapt. And England were still doing what they were doing right the way through the game, which was working to a certain degree. And they just didn't adjust. Added to Jamie George's couple of howlers, and their line-out just fell apart.
What are you thinking as a hooker when there is someone like a second row like Retallick who's absolutely killing you at the line-out and there's nothing you can do?
Yeah, it's a very frustrating. Thankfully, it didn't happen too often, but it is a very frustrating thing. Like, as a thrower, everyone thinks there's a fine art and stuff to it, but the main thing about a thrower is that you miss the opposition. That's the way you throw. So, like, you know what your guys are going to do. So you look at the opposition and you see the little nuances of what they're doing. Like, if you've called the ball to the tail and you see, God, they've read it, I've got to push it a little bit higher, I've got to give my guy as much chance as I can. But when you're retaliate, look, we all know that guy rightfully has the title of the best second row in the world at the moment. And, you know, his ability to read the line out is second to none. He is absolutely superb at it. But you've just got to beat that guy with a different way, with speed, with knowledge, with familiarity with the guys that you have. That's the way you do it. You don't just give him a straight jump where he's already standing. You make him move, because he may read it, but his lifters may not. And that's the key. You need to create a scenario where he can't be as good as he obviously is. You just take away from that ability just that little bit by a little bit of shifted movement, and then you get up there and then the ball's gone and sure, away you go.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the most fascinating elements of this game this weekend, as will the scrum. And I did want to get your take on that finally, because Tadhg Furlong has actually had a lot of interesting quotes in the newspapers yesterday morning, speaking about the differences between North and Southern Hemisphere scrummaging, which I think we've heard about in terms of different styles over the past couple of years. But he says that the New Zealand style of scrum now is totally different to the one he first faced in 2016. He says they're holding the ball in at the back longer. Is that something that you've seen yourself?
It is. It's something that you got to think about it, that everything about Southern Hemisphere rugby is about just getting the ball going. We've always, from Northern Hemisphere thought our game is probably a bit more tighter, a bit more direct, where they are able to, you know, commit less to the rucks, one or two guys, keep everyone out. Everybody has to generate, being able to move hands no matter what position you are. But now it's starting to go back into the power play a little bit, you know, into the scrum, that really taking to the opposition, because you've no idea how much energy it takes out of you to be on the weaker scrum. Mm. To be in a position that you're up against a scrum, that you know every time you get down, because you're giving your absolute, but you're still going to end up getting pushed back. And that is totally energy sapping. It really is a hard thing. And when you come out of there, okay, you're programmed to move, your feet start moving, everything, but it takes you a couple of yards to get back into your stride. And that's what New Zealand are now looking to exploit. They have a strong scrum, but it was very interesting to see Ireland against Argentina, who are traditionally, obviously, supposed to be one of the best scrummaging, you know, their history in the countries in the world. The fact is, I think they were laying down a statement for next week against New Zealand. I think it's going to be an absolute ding-dong battle. And to me, I think we're looking at parity there. You know,
right.
Yeah, I don't think either side, there might be a few occasions where one side gets up and, you know, has a cracker and then the other one, you know, comes back at it, because I think both sides will have the ability to have a belt at the other one if there's even the slightest mistake, even the slightest error. We've all seen so many times, you know, that a scrum would be dominant for a long time and then they'd just switch off for that 1 second and then they'd end up turning a ball over and giving away a vital penalty. And like even last season that was happening. And, you know, against Australia in the summer in particular. But I think the parity when the two of them are getting it right, but expect every now and again, because it's a great way to get your, you know, there's very few one-on-one direct battles anymore. Mm. And the front row, you know, really do relish in that, the dark arts. And it is a great way of getting one up. And it's amazing the lift it gives a whole team if you manage to get on top of the scrum.
Are Ireland going to win on Saturday?
Honestly, I think so, yeah. I think it's an amazing New Zealand side that's been picked. I think the experience right the way through it. There's so many amazing battles. We've talked about them already. You know, the greatest second row in the world, Retallick, against probably the heir apparent in James Ryan, who, what a player this kid is, and every single thing that's expected of him, he does that and more. And then you've got the two best out halves in the world with Sexton, you know, and you know, that's the thing that you have to go with Bowden Barrett, and that's the way they play are slightly different. You know, Johnny Sexton, the master, pulling the trigger exactly when it needs to, execution and plan, doing exactly what's needed to defeat a team. And Bowden Barrett probably much more of a, you know, off the cuff player. He's a nightmare for opposition defences because you cannot take your eye off him for a split second. No. Because he's one of the fastest players out there. And that's one of the most unusual things about a 10. Like, he's so, so quick and will exploit it. And also he has all the skills that you could possibly look for in a number 10. There's so many battles right the way through. But I genuinely think that this Irish side is a team now that don't accept defeat against any team. There's enough of history in the recent years, enough of memory within this team that they know the hurt of losing the way they have and how what it feels like to win. So I genuinely think the home advantage, we will just see it through.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an absolute ding-dong battle, as you say. If you're in Lansdowne Road that weekend, remember, Volkswagen, proud partner of Irish Rugby, are going to be putting Irish and New Zealand fans head-to-head in a rugby trivia quiz this Saturday at the Volkswagen Fan TV. That's the area on Lansdowne Road outside the Aviva Stadium. You can join Shane and test your rugby knowledge to win signed jerseys. For more information, see Volkswagen Ireland's social media
channels.
It'll
be very easy to win jerseys, basically.
Well, what's your rugby trivia like?
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a very, very tough challenge for everybody pops on down there. So make sure you do that if you're in the vicinity this weekend. Shane, thanks a million for popping in, and thanks a million for getting our hopes up. I'm liking the call on Saturday, predicting Ireland to win. Enjoy the game, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Yes, I will.
So Shane Byrne says Ireland are going to win. Alan Quinlan says Ireland are going to lose by a couple of points. It seems that opinion is a small bit divergent in this one, but either way, it seems most people predict it's going to be a pretty close one. Just to mention, by the way, we've got a little special lunchtime event with Science Week today with Andy Lee on the panel, presented by Nathan Murphy, about weight cutting in the Drury buildings. That's here in Dublin City Centre. Full details are on offtheball.com. So if you're around Dublin, around near Stephen's Green area, and have no lunchtime plans, go and listen to some Andy Lee. There's certainly much worse ways of spending lunchtime. Now, Shane Byrne's nephew, is here in the studio, Niall McGrath, host of Off the Brawl.
Shane Byrne's nephew.
You said you used to have a mullet, and I was like, actually, you do kind of look a small bit like Shane Byrne, but we won't dig into the family ties just yet, because we do want to talk mixed martial arts. It's World Championship time, amateur World Championship time with mixed martial arts, and big Irish interest this weekend.
Yeah, massive Irish interest this week in Bahrain. Fantastic results from the guys there. Five fighters into the world finals tomorrow, fighting for gold, which, you know, I've said it for a long time. We've had a lot of medals in the Worlds and the Euros over the last couple of years. But this sport down the line is definitely going to be considered for Olympic Games, possibly in 10 years. So, you know, when we've athletes on this level producing this amount of fantastic results on a world stage, is testament to what the coaches have done for the sport in this country and where it's come over the last number of years. There's still a huge amount of talent in the country blossoming through, and that's obviously we've seen that this week with the results. The likes of Lee Hammond, a guy who I think people know from his incredible grappling, a guy who's been on the scene for, you know, a number of years here out in John's gym and in SBG. You've guys from Andy Ryan's gym as well, doing fantastic work. So I think it's time for the government now to really step up to the mark and, you know, give the sport recognition. I think Shane Ross needs to seriously consider it after this weekend, and hopefully we'll get a big haul of medals tomorrow. And, you know, listen, congratulations to all the guys. Absolutely fantastic work out there in Bahrain. Amazing stuff for such a small nation.
The thing is, if it becomes an Olympic sport, the sky's the limit then, because talking in purely fame and notoriety terms, those people who would then be representing Ireland in the Olympic Games would then be getting coverage on terrestrial television on the regular basis in the qualifications for the Olympic Games, and of course during the Olympic Games, and they would get to a level of profile that would be just below our UFC fighters.
That's what we need. You know, it's really the main interest here is Conor McGregor at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said when I was out in Las Vegas, I said, you know, the fight, especially there, was bigger than Conor and Habib. It's about putting other guys, you know, getting them recognition for what they've done in the sport here in the country. You know, you've some fantastic fighters here in the regional scene, pro fighters. You know, we've had world champions and multiple promotions. We've a whole host of fighters that are signed to Bellator Fighting Championships now. We've other guys, you know, probably on the cusp thereabouts in the UFC. Guys like Reese McKee, if he can put a run together in Cage Warriors, he's going to be considered for the UFC. Definitely a young kid. And we obviously did that weight cut video at Reese as well. So there's a number of guys here that can really benefit from what's going on out in Bahrain. And I think, you know, if this sport does go the way it is going and the way the World Championships are going, without question, and the professional setup in which it's run out there in Bahrain, the Mixed Martial Arts Federation do a fantastic job. It's so smoothly run, so well organised. it is just going to put a better spotlight on the sport. And there's obviously modified rules as well, which make it different. But it's and so many weight classes, but fantastic job and really something that the Olympic Committee are going to have to seriously consider in the coming years.
Well, that's the key word there, better spotlight on the sport. It's easy to put a spotlight on the sport. It's easy to show videos of hand trucks being thrown at buses. I apologise for the very easy analogy there. But
that's Dana White and the UFC, how they promote fights.
Exactly. Whereas if the Irish government, instead of that being the representation of MMA, because let's face it, a lot of the people involved in the Irish government see MMA and the UFC as the very same thing. If they then see MMA as a sport that the IOC want in their
games. Well, a lot of the media here too as well. And, you know, I don't even want to mention his name. That article we saw a number of weeks ago, absolutely pathetic. That was put out and even consumed. It really was. And I don't even give it a spotlight by talking about it. But you need to, you know, look outside of what we're seeing in front of our TV screens. Because clearly that's entertainment. A lot of it, the way the UFC are selling it, promoting it. It's selling a fight. It's totally different to what's going on in the background and, you know, obviously the amateur progression of the sport and what's happened. It's similar to the early days of boxing, you know, Olympic, like Michael Creed back in 1990, things like that. Mm. You know, that's the kind of level of excitement we can translate if we get behind these athletes and give them a platform. And it's the government that have to do that.
Yeah, and they might be influenced by the idea that the IOC wanted in their games, and it'll all lead to a positive thing. We do want to talk about Conor McGregor briefly. He's been called out this week.
Yeah, Donald Cerrone fought last weekend, had a great win over Mike Perry, and he's subsequently, there was a lot of sort of interest amongst the fans and the media, and I think there we have it, Cowboy calling out Conor. So I think it's a fight for me that makes a lot of sense, because Cowboy's sort of, you know, he's been up and down the last couple of fights. He's moved camp. You know, he always sort of had a tumultuous relationship with one of his coaches, Mike Wingjohn, who he hasn't been working for a while, but he's officially declared he's no longer with the camp. There was, you know, sort of words and things sort of thrown. But that's a fight I think that makes a lot of sense for me. You've obviously Tony Ferguson as well. I don't think we can really obviously start talking 100% about fights for Conor, because we have this hearing coming up on the 12th of December, where him, Seth and Habib have to face the Nevada State Athletic Commission. We're going to see what the suspension is, if there's much of a one or whatever. I think we can start talking more of that. But, you know, Donald Cerrone, and I think Conor has often said, you know, the fight has to make sense for him on a financial level. I think maybe Cowboy is sort of a better known, you know, fighter than Tony Ferguson in terms of like social media following, things like that. He's a very marketable guy. That could catch Conor's attention. So I wouldn't totally rule out that fight. I love the fight. I think I absolutely love it. It's a great stylistic matchup. And I think the UFC as well, it could benefit them, because, you know, Cowboy's been a little bit all over the place in his last number of fights, losing to Darren Till, obviously the higher weight class. But then you've Conor obviously coming off the loss to Habib. We haven't seen him since, you know, properly before that, since the Eddie Alvarez fight in 2016. So it could be a good gauge.
If you put yourself in the McGregor shoes, what's
you know, I'm very sort of cutting this, and you know, I like you know, I look at some of the media posts, I look at some things he said. I think it was Instagram post that Conor put up.
Oh, the breakdown of his fight.
Yeah, the breakdown. Yeah, it was really interesting to me. You know, he said, "Listen to nobody but yourself and your skill set. You are the master of your own universe. I am the master of this. I must take my own advice." You know. What's he saying there? Is he saying, you know, he needs to maybe move away from Dublin, train somewhere else, do some? I don't know. I'm not so sure what the words there are, but there is definitely subliminal sort of meaning, I think, behind that. And, you know, he hasn't really said much since the fight, bar that, even if anything at all in relation to the fight. We've seen him thereabouts, you know, promoting obviously his whiskey, doing things like that. But, you know, sometimes for me, I think a change, you know, sort of mix things up a little bit in this camp could be the way forward for Conor. And I think there's maybe a little bit of a stigma here. You know, we've seen, you know, maybe because of what he said in the past, you know, in terms of, you know, oh, you know, keep the people around me all here. You know, we look at guys like Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson, you know, obviously used to be in a camp, but he adjusts a camp exactly, meticulously to the way he wants it. I don't see a problem with that. Maybe, you know, go overseas, get a couple of guys, hand select them. I think maybe the amount of people and the entourage around Conor was distracting. And maybe he's realised that. I'm not sure what's going on in his mind. I don't think anyone is a lot of the time. But it could be a good thing to do. And often you see, like, you can name the fighters. We can name, you know, TJ Dillashaw. Team Alpha Male. Fought his best mate twice. Well, former best mate. They weren't ever mates, apparently, but they were teammates and used to train together every day. And Cody Garbrandt took the world title off him after moving to a different gym. I'm not saying he has to move to a different gym. I'm saying maybe for Conor, it could be rejuvenating. What's the other word I'm looking for here? Reinvigorating is the word I'm looking for, because you know that performance was not good enough, and I think he even admitted that against Khabib Nurmagomedov. It was a very, very poor version of Conor McGregor, in my opinion. Watching on, even in terms of his strike,
underachieving. Or is he?
Maybe not. You know, all fighters have to come off the top of the slope at some stage. And
when I say underachieving, I don't mean that in the sense that on a consistent basis. I mean, in the context of the Khabib fight, did he underperform?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think there's any question about it. If you look at the first round in that fight, definitely. The second round, definitely. Yeah, it wasn't a good performance from Conor McGregor at all. In my opinion, I thought there was things there, you know, you don't do when you're fighting a grappler. And I think it was very evident to see.
Like,
so
I wonder, could you compare it to a golfer who sometimes just needs to change a caddy just for that sense of freshness? It's nothing really against the quality of the caddy, but that, I don't know, I'm not sure what you think, but maybe is a split.
Yeah, why not?
Why
not mix it up? Why is there a big stigma? You see it in fight, you know, the fight game the whole time. We've had Robbie Lawler, we've had Alistair Overeem, who's a notorious sort of gym hopper. You know, Luke Rockhold, who's been with AKA for years, you know, under Javier Mendez, and, you know, he's moved down to Henry Hoof now in Florida. But he'll still always be an AKA team member. You don't have to, you know, break your affiliation. It's about fight by fight, doing different things at different times. And why? Why is it such a bad thing? Is it because he's, you know, he's been in Ireland and, you know, obviously they've come up with John. Is there a sense of massive loyalty?
Does he owe something to John Kavanagh?
Not in my opinion. Maybe he feels that way, but maybe it's, you know, Conor's, you know, at the end of the day, I think as you said in the Instagram post there, you know, it's about listening to yourself, doing what you believe is the right thing to do.
What would happen if you left John Kavanagh?
What would happen? In terms of?
Like, how would his fight style change dramatically? Is there a specific coach that he would go to instead?
You know, I would imagine, more of a grappling base, sort of all-round gym, striking gym, so... obviously, Owen Roddy's done a fantastic job. Owen's a fantastic striking coach and doesn't get the credit he deserves, I think, a lot of times. Yeah, it would be very interesting. There's lots of gyms in the United States. You know, you've American Top Team, you've Rufus Sport, you know, in Canada. Then you have, you know, Firas Sahabi and his gym and TriStar Gym. There's so many different options, variations you can go to. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, set up your own camp like Tony Ferguson does. He brings in Eddie Bravo from 10 Planet Jiu-Jitsu, has wrestling coaches, striking coaches. But Tony does it in terms of a way, they go up to Big Bear, they seclude themselves, and he handpicks them. He's in charge of them to a certain extent. He knows what these guys are going to bring to the table. They're obviously allowed to push the limits with him, but he's the guy who's actually picking and directing the camp. And he keeps it a lot smaller. It's, you know, it's a very small camp, Tony. There's three, maybe four guys. There's no big entourage. Maybe that's an issue. That, like, there's a lot of guys around, you know, at times when you see Conor. And maybe just shorten it down a little bit. Do something different. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. You know, I think there's a bit of a stigma maybe in Ireland compared to other countries about guys maybe branching out, doing something different.
Yeah,
I have zero problem with it.
To be fair, though, a very unique element.
I'd like to see it because you know, it takes it out. Yeah, there is a unique element, and maybe that's something that's holding.
It's got to be hard.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, 100%. But you know, so many guys do it. So many guys move out. You don't have to end the relationship. Maybe, you know, one, two fights, go do something different, and it does reinvigorate. The amount of times that, you know, good pal of mine in UFC flyweight or lightweight, Paul Felder, and he's a commentator as well. Paul was training in New York with Mark Henry, who's Frankie Edgar's coach. He's worked with Khabib numerous amount of times as well. You know, Mark's, I think he's been on off the ball a number of times as well. You know, he was training in Philly, then he went there, and then he left there, and he found a home in Rufus Sport. And Paul went on a 3-4 fight winning streak until his last fight, where he broke his arm actually in the first round and actually went on to fight three rounds and lose a split decision. You know, it totally sort of reinvigorated his style. His confidence was low. It just does little things for you that sometimes you can't really explain. But, you know, something like that, I think, could be the way forward. And, you know, I wouldn't be totally against it. I don't know why people have a hang-up about it, to be honest with you. It's not the end of the world if something like that happens now for one, two fights. But something, maybe we should, you know, maybe it might happen down the line. It's going to be very interesting to see how that pans out. I'm not speculating on anything like that. It's something I'd actually like to see, to be honest. You just maybe reinvigorate Conor. If he's to come back. You never know either with Conor as well. You know, he's this hearing coming up in Nevada on the 12th of December. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, interesting indeed. Niall, good stuff.
Let's leave it. Everyone should... Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. Everyone tune in tomorrow if you can to the lads fighting in Bahrain. Yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff to have five guys in a world final. You can buy it online, I think, for $5.99 on International Mix Martial Arts Federation.com, IMAF.com. So go check that out, definitely, guys.
Good stuff. Go to youtube.com/off the ball for Off the Brawl every week with Niall and Simon. And the boxing version involving Andy, Ronan, and Phil is coming your way. A couple of episodes every single week. So make sure to go onto our YouTube to check that out. That's all we've got time for this morning. Just let you know you can podcast this show on Spotify now. Just go in there and search OTBAM. And we're also wherever else you get your pods, on iTunes or whatever Android app you use. And as you should know by now, we'll post all our best stuff across Off the Ball to our YouTube channel. Head over to youtube.com/off the ball. As I said, we're back on Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. reacting to what we hope will be a win against the All Blacks and looking ahead to Monday night in Aarhus if we still have a chance of survival in League B of the Nations League. Off the Ball, back on your radios tonight from 7 o'clock and across all our social media platforms. We'll chat to you later. Bye bye for now.
OTB
AM. Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a dedicated call centre.